You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Thanks!
Don't mention it, sir. Steve Rogers.
We've met.
I don't see how. You mean, you were the little boy?
I've been waiting for this moment for a long time.
Gee whiz.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love to me in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 141 for the 30th of... Oh, I've lost my show now. 30th of July, 2011.
And we have a black screen. Oh, there we
are. Why is it my iPad drops to black as soon as the show starts?
It hates you.
It hates me. I am David McVeigh. I am joined, as usual, by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Yeah, well,
in entirely the wrong seat.
Hi.
And we're also joined by our guest, Sean Lindsay, continuing on from the Geek Action Show with his wonderful 3D laptop, which we're all very jealous of. And Sean Lindsay can be found at 3dhorizon.com.au. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing very well in the 5 minutes since we last spoke.
Oh, there you go. We always have to do it. We actually had this discussion once with another guest many, many, many moons ago. And I had to explain to them that we actually have two very different audiences.
That's true.
And so, there's a lot of people who don't listen to the Geek Action Show. They just tune in for the film show. And if we're too inside baseball, they go, what the hell are you talking about?
So for the people who have just joined us, I am fine. Thank you.
That's good. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of the Geek Action Network. And this week, we are going to review the new Marvel superhero film. And I think this brings us to conclusion for basically the superheroes of this year. Of course, Captain America, the First Avenger. We're also going to do a little bit of film news, including brand new trailers for, are you ready, Josh?
Yes.
Battleship.
Oh, yeah.
And a new trailer for Red State.
Okay, that's cool.
Is awesome. So we also have a trailer for Brett Ratner's new film, and I know everybody's immediately just but Brett Ratner's new film is called Tower Heist, and it stars Eddie Murphy.
And you know what? I gotta say, after seeing that video, it's nice to see Eddie Murphy back where he should be.
Yes.
Even though it's going to be terrible.
Funnily enough, it actually looks kind of fun. So we'll have a look.
It looks fun, man. But yeah. You know what? That's what I said about, sort of Beverly Hills Cop 3.
That's true. But I didn't mind Brett Ratner's film. What was it called? Under the one about the thieves.
Under a Tuscan sky?
No, under the sunset or something
that
like that.
That sentence makes no sense.
Oh, yeah.
What was that thing called? What was that? Remember that one? It had Selma Hayek and Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, I know the one. Yeah. I thought it was something about Tuscan something.
No, it wasn't Tuscan. That's the Diane Lane film you're thinking of. But I'm probably combining words.
I didn't realize Brett Ratner directed that.
Yeah, he did. I know, it's very surprising. That's what I'm saying. So I'm hoping Tower Heist is more like that and less like X-Men Last Stand. So we'll see how we go. But first we're going to do our feedback and what we've been watching. And we've got an email here from Corin. And I thought I'd just bring this up very quickly. Corin says, where are we? I've got a couple here. Corin says, hi to both of you and the one who shall not be named, but quote unquote can be found at three places in the internet. I think he's referring to Richard, who isn't here.
I'm sorry, Richard, I am taking your chair.
He says, I just caught up again with your shows and enjoyed the discussion about Harry Potter 7.2. I did not see it yet because I am waiting for both to be available on disc, DVD, Blu-ray, HDD, you name it, I don't care. I think the only reason for the split into the two was for money. No shit. I have nothing more to say. Just imagine splitting all of the Lord of the Rings into two parts. Just horrible. Well, they already split Lord of the Rings into three parts.
Well,
so.
each of the films is split into two parts when you watch them on Blu-ray.
That's right. If you watch on Blu-ray, they are actually split
into
two discs.
Or the extended editions on DVD.
Yeah, the extended discs. When I listened to the Harry Potter episode, I wondered if you already found a winner for the 25 words contest. Sadly for me, you changed the challenge, which meant for me that the winner was then announced last week. And I have to apologize. I haven't actually emailed that disc yet. I've been really busy this week. It will go out first thing Monday to our winner. He Lies. Sent his email address. So please bear with me. Sadly for me, you changed... Anyway, congrats from me to the winner. Still, I wanted to make a late disqualified entry, which amazingly works for both challenges. So if he had actually sent this in, this may have actually had a chance. The original challenge was 25 words, why what you liked about Transformers 2, and then we changed it in the second week to 25 words of what you did not like about Transformers 2. So, challenge one, he says, I liked Transformers 2 because all I remember are giant freaking robots and a hot Megan. Challenge two was, I hated Transformers 2 because all I remember are giant freaking robots and a hot Megan. so much for today. Cheers, Corin. So thank you very much, Corin, as usual. But unfortunately, yeah, that's already been won. Now, I just wanted to bring up this very quickly because Corin sent me this email and I got this at like 2 o'clock in the morning. All right. And I brought this up. I've actually answered Corin. I sent him an email. But Corin said, hi, webmaster of geekactually.com. I can understand that you need users to spend as much time as possible on your page to impress companies, which will then invite you to private shows. It sounds like it's pornographic or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
If I wouldn't be so determined to write a feedback to your film show, then I would have left a 15 seconds after searching your damn feedback for your damn feedback email address. Yes, I should know it by now, but as you said yourself in the last and before last Geek Show, the internet is our extended memory. We know where to find things, but not the things themselves anymore. So I searched on your page and did not find it. If you have it somewhere, then it is not at the obvious place about us or contact us where the film actually feedback address. Maybe you need to trim your blog a little. Now, I answered him and basically said, Corin, calm down. The film actually feedback address is new. We've only just instigated that address. It hasn't gone on the contact. It is actually on the contact us address now. I put it on last night. Mm. So it's there. I had actually forgotten to put it there. But I did point out that the feedback address is actually on every single episode's post. All right. So if you just find the episode, scroll down.
I'm pretty sure if you type geek, in fact, I'm going to check this. Keep talking.
Keep talking. It's actually on every single post we put the contact information of an episode. Now, and I also pointed out that if you were really determined, you could have just sent your feedback to the Geek Actually feedback address because it all actually comes to the same place. So just be aware.
In fact, they all get to me. It comes up with almost every single post if you type it into Google. If you actually scan down, you can then find it. So, yeah, Corin, come on, man.
Now, Corin does put in the next paragraph, now shake off the anger you build up while reading it and cheer up with a smiley face. The first part was damn German talking. I think Corin is supposed to be, is trying to be funny.
Yeah. We love you, man.
I love you, Corin. It didn't work, though. All right. Now, I was just frustrated not to find your address. That's all. I love you all, he says. Good. Ah. All right. The address is there, dude. Just have a look. It's actually on every single post.
As a simple aside, when you're dealing with, especially with a small website, you can put anything in front of the at symbol.
There is a catch-all address.
And it will tend to go to the webmaster.
There is actually a catch-all address, which will catch all Geek Action Mail. We don't give that out. We don't want you to use that. The reason we have multiple addresses is so that we can easily parse what's going where, okay? Yep. But the bottom line is, feedback at geekactually.com, feedback at filmactually.com, they all come to me. It all gets to me eventually, all right? So you just have to
That's what trust. You said about the donut.
What? All right. What have we been watching this week, guys, before we move into this Captain America thing?
So much, man. I've been on a movie binge because, like, what happened is I finished up all my games, and there's kind of a lull period for the next couple of weeks just because nothing's out until sort of start of the thing. And then I just had this backlog pile of movies, and then we had a JB sale where it's 20% off stuff, and
it.
I was like, whoa.
I actually got the little slip, and I went, I've got to go to that, and I completely forgot about it.
Yeah, no. JB had a friends and family deal, which they usually have all the time, and we'll probably have another one at some stage, but that. And I went out and bought
20%
a whole...
20% off everything.
Exactly. And it was great because I went in and bought a whole bunch of things. I bought a double pack and I watched Mirrors 1, which is the remake version, which I think is a damn fine horror film. Like, anyone can try and debate me if they want, but Kiefer Sutherland is a great actor for what he does, like, in his typecast. And, you know, I'd actually go as far as to say he's quite a good actor generally. He's great in that film, and the film is brilliant. Then I watched number two, not quite so good. Nick Starr was probably the first thing that they did wrong. The man is not a lead.
No.
He has a very... look, I'm sorry. He has an ugly face. Like, look, he may not be a bad actor, I don't care, but he's not pretty, and therefore the lead thing kind of didn't work. Great breast content in it. Brilliant, brilliant. Very fake, but very, very decent. Horrible horror effects, far too much gore, just loses itself entirely. Like, number one is a very good suspense-esque kind of a horror. Two is just disturbing. I watched The Triangle, which I'm going to get
really
you to
see
watch
yeah,
as
really
well. And yeah, this film, Melissa George leads it and does a really decent job at it. That film was very enjoyable to sit down and watch. I watched Jason... Six? No, seven. Seven? No, because eight's... Is it eight or nine?
Friday the 13th, part six is...
Which one's Manhattan? Is
Manhattan
that nine?
Manhattan is eight.
Is it eight? Yeah. All right, then I watch seven.
Okay.
Which is pretty bad.
Yeah.
I've been going through and systematically reticking.
They tend to kind of merge between two and X.
And X,
they're really
They're interchangeable. Film. They're pretty much the same thing. And I'll always remember a few of them. Alice Cooper's soundtrack will kind of make, you know, six in my mind for the rest of my life. And I don't think it'll ever be able to leave. Plus, that one is just a comedy and it's brilliantly bad.
That's how, like, I feel about Six. Six is just a comedy.
Yeah.
I love Six. Six makes me laugh.
And what did I watch last night? Oh, I watched Alligator.
I love Alligator.
Oh, dude, you know what? Me too. High five for Alligator. Yeah.
Alligator is actually a really good film.
And
it's
low-budget,
cheesy nonsense, but it's really good.
Well, dude, and there's a lot about the film. Like, it's not... A lot of simple films get immediately disclaimed because they lose themselves in what they are, essentially, and they just become rubbish. This had a lot of statements to give out. I mean, it's a very big statement against, you know, genetic engineering and all this sort of stuff.
And Forster's fantastic, man.
Oh, dude, and him with his little, like, comb over here. And, you know, the fact that half the movie is a joke about his comb over here. And the terrible relationship with him and...
aside from some of the shots where just they used like a real alligator and put big props around it, some of the mechanical effects are really good. And it has that one moment, slight spoilers for a film that is, 30 years old, but there's that one moment where the kid gets to walk the plank on the diving board and they turn the lights
on.
That scene is amazing!
And not only that, me and Celine actually like roared out loud in complete cheer because we didn't think in the 80s anybody would have the balls to kill a child.
That's when we still killed kids. It was later when they brought in all the rules.
Yeah. No, but I was just so impressed to watch this kid just get completely nommed by a giant alligator. I was just like, yes! Win!
It was only totally a few years earlier that John Carpenter shot the little girl, too.
Yes,
you know? So,
that's true.
And this is, Alligator is also, I think from memory, it's a script by John Sayles, who went on to do like quality art house stuff. So, you know, everybody starts somewhere. When you look at Alligator, you go, this is actually not a bad film. I actually bought a copy of it from the States on Amazon years ago because I always remember Alligator as being this really interesting film. It's a really good film.
It's been a long, long time since
watch it again. It's well worth having a look at. We also saw, very briefly, we'll just cover very quickly, we also saw last night Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I've already tweeted that. We're not under embargo, so we can talk about it, but it doesn't actually open until the end of this week, so we're going to review it properly next week.
Damn right.
But we will just give you a couple of prelims really quickly and just say that it's damn good.
And you know what? Fox needs to get off their ass and better market this thing because this film is like, and even if you don't 100% like it, it's one of the best films of this segment of the year.
Yeah.
Like, it's still either way, like for the 3D effects alone and for the emotional rollercoaster.
We're not talking about 3D as in third dimension. We're talking about just CG effects, and the CG is awesome. I mean, it is amazing.
Yeah.
The you believe Caesar is alive.
And there's no distinction. It's like that whole it's like District 9. It's like they are just characters in the film. They are not extension, you know, CGI
characters. And there is emotion between the apes near the end when they're actually, you know, doing their uprising.
Yeah.
That's not a spoiler. We know it's going to come. But there is actually emotion. But the scene between Caesar and the gorilla is fabulous. You know, feel that. So, yeah, we'll review that in detail next week and give you our thoughts. Why we're mentioning it now, though, is because it does open on Thursday. Everybody who listens to this show should go out and see it because we probably will do a spoiler section, a time spoiler section next week, because we do want to talk about a few things in this film. So go see it if you can, because it is well worth having a look at. The other thing I finally saw last week, we teased it. I saw Hannah this week. I said to Josh, wait till next week. We'll talk about it briefly then. Look, Josh and I are on different sides of the table. Different sides of the table on this. I'm probably not as far off as he thinks. Didn't make me angry or anything like that. I actually didn't mind the film. Hannah, how do you pronounce her name? Saoirse Ronan?
Yep.
Get a real name. Anyway.
Saoirse.
Thank you.
Snap. Yeah, there you go. You just got told. That's how it is.
I got owned, man.
Yeah.
it's an Irish name.
Ah, there you go. Okay. She's fantastic. There's no doubt. I mean, I love her. I think she is just a fantastic little actress. I thought she was best thing in Lovely Bones as well. She does a great job. You're absolutely right. Cate Blanchett is friggin' awful in this film. Her accent is so put on that you just sit there and go, oh, just get off screen. Every time she's on, you feel like this little like bullet being driven through your forehead and you just want her to go away. So I really didn't like her
at talking,
all.
Crystal Skull? Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, is that we're talking Galadriel Bad?
No, Crystal Skull Bad.
Crystal Skull Bad.
Yeah, Crystal Skull Bad. It's her American accent is as bad as her Russian in Crystal Skull.
Wow.
And there's no emotional depth to her character at all. I didn't buy anything to her.
Mm.
I like the film. I think the film has a serious pacing issue in the middle of the film. I think that it starts strong. I think it actually ends fairly strongly. But it's got this moment in this 40...
I'm sorry. Ends strongly. You mean the ending where she walks out of a wolf's mouth? I mean, is there any... I'm sorry. Is there any worse way you could slap someone in the face with obviousness?
I thought the imagery was actually quite striking. I quite liked the fairy tale imagery and everything else that was going on. I had no problem with that. The problem I have with any film is if you start to slow down to the point where I go, I'm looking at my watch, what am I doing? That's the problem I have with the film. The middle 45 minutes of that film is slow.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I had no problem with the imagery. I had no problem with the idea of the film. I had no problem with her. I even liked Eric Bana, and I'm not a huge Eric Bana fan, but I even look quite... But once again, mercifully, he's only in the first 15 minutes and the last 15 minutes. There really is very little Bana in the middle, you know? But I just felt overall that the film is not... I don't understand why it's the critic darling. Is what I'm trying to say. Because I just kind of... I walked out going, yeah, it was okay. You know? It was nothing special about the film that I felt. You know? But I didn't hate it. You know? It was kind of one of those films... It's one of those films where I'm not going to remember it in a couple of years' time. It's gone. You know? Yep. Well, anyway. I'm definitely going to remember it. What have you been watching, Sean?
Oh, not a lot, unfortunately. I wish I had prepped a little bit more. But I've been watching Romeo and Juliet.
I want to see that actually.
And over and over. It's actually it was not terribly well received. I don't think. I think because it wasn't a Pixar film, people tend to think, oh, it's animated, but it's not Pixar. I'll just skip it.
Yeah. Well, this year Pixar let us all down. So.
I think it's a film for. It's definitely a film for children.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of markets itself a little bit as being, you know, there's a little bit there for parents, but it's really it's a kids' film. Excuse me. Sorry. I have a lot of young children who absolutely adore the film, so I have.
Yeah, my son really wants to see it, so I've got to get him.
It's a warm, funny, lighthearted little film. It has its problems. It takes the whole sort of. The pun is there in the title, and if you want, you know, when you read it, you can picture
you
it immediately.
Get on board straight away, or
yeah, exactly. You know what you're in for. I wrote in my review, there's very few films can actually capture the entirety of the movie in their title, but that's it. It is Romeo and Juliet enacted by garden gnomes. And
sounds good to me. Josh is looking skeptical over there.
You have no, I'm going to guess you have no children.
Yeah, no. No, I mean, I knew that was going to be the case.
It's a kid's movie. There's not enough there for adults to watch just by themselves. Yeah. It doesn't have that sort of, you know, the magic of say, you know, of Wall-E or some of the more recent Pixar films. Except Cars 2. But it's a romp for children. It's hilariously funny in places. It has tremendous action in places. In 3D, it is beautiful. So if you have a chance to watch it in 3D, if you have a 3D a Blu-ray player, you can rent.
I don't, unfortunately. Yeah. I wish I did.
Rent or buy the 3D Blu-ray. It's definitely worth the extra money. It pops off the screen. The colors are incredibly rich. The gnomes actually look like they're real. It's hard to describe. Most animated films,
they look like they're ceramic.
This is exactly the point. In most animated films, when you see they're cartoonish characters, and even in 3D, they still look like cartoonish characters. In this, if you watch it in 2D, they're cartoonish. If you watch it in 3D, they become actual figures that are beautifully animated.
That's cool.
It's a tremendous transition, and the 3D is worth the extra money.
Fantastic. I've got to catch it. I won't be able to catch it in 3D now, unfortunately, but I do have to catch up with it because, as I say, Nicholas wants to see it as well. It looks fun. The trailer was fun. I have to have a look at it.
I was a weird child, though, man. I never got into like those ones that kids like but adults didn't. If there wasn't depth to it, I just wasn't interested. So, yeah, I've watched it on TVs at work. I will not.
I just kind of find myself watching everything nowadays. I have two more very quickly I just want to throw out there. And first of all, I bought the Blu-ray of Apocalypse Now. And I bought the deluxe set that actually has both films and the documentary and everything else.
Yeah.
I watched the 1979 release, so that's the one I really wanted to see because this is the one that they showed at Cannes. This is the newly restored, remastered version of the original film, not the redo. And let me just tell you, on Blu-ray, it is sensational. I mean, it is just an amazing, it's still to this day an amazing looking film.
It is,
Absolutely loved it. I can't wait to watch it again, quite frankly. I'm going to sit down and watch it again because it's just an amazing experience. The other one I watched last night, actually, while I was preparing my list, funnily enough, for this show, I sat there and I watched, finally, Your Highness. Josh. And I have to say that...
what did you think?
I have to say that it is quite frankly the second most unfunny film I've ever seen in my life. Following
it.
Big Stan.
I thankfully skipped Big Stan. But for some reason I put myself through Your Highness earlier this week.
I thought Your Highness was so unfunny. I didn't laugh once in the entire film. I thought it was actually excruciatingly painful in places. And if it had just been a stoner comedy, I actually would have got more out of it. But there wasn't even enough of that humor. And it was just painful. And I watched the unrated edition.
I haven't seen the unrated
a film that is, it is excruciatingly gory. It is amazing how gory that film is.
I love that.
And I have no problem with gore, but the problem is that gore... Another film I can equate it to is Tropic Thunder, which was also very gory. But Tropic Thunder was funny, you know, and I quite liked Tropic Thunder, and I got the gag of Tropic Thunder carried me through. This film just did not work. And you know what? It just feels like Danny McBride all over it. And I like him as a support player, and I've said it before. As a support player, I love him. He's no leading man, and he should not be writing his films.
There's something fundamentally wrong with Your Highness that it just cannot escape from. There's not even one single good bit in the film.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I know, Josh, you disagree, but I could not get it.
Yeah.
Nothing in that film struck me. I sat there watching going, and even when Natalie Portman finally took her clothes off at the riverside, it wasn't long enough. It was like, finally, something to hold on to. No, it's gone.
I still quote that film because I love it. It's just like the whole triangle face thing just absolutely floored me. The bit where they're watching her get changed and they're like, stand perfectly still, she can't see us. And they're just standing there like this as she looks directly at them.
Two moments she just mentioned, both in the trailer.
Yeah, and that's fine. Look, dude, again, I mean, we're never going to fully agree on it. I found it fun, and I really enjoyed it. I just, and look, I mean, Danny McBride is supposed to be bad, and I think it's the closest he's ever got to doing a film that's even mildly funny, because his shows are terrible, and I don't get them, and I don't find them funny. By having him
I thought he was funny in Pineapple Express. I thought he was funny.
I'm talking about things where he plays late.
Like Eastbound and Down.
Exactly,
and
stuff like that. And it's like, when he's playing a prick, if you don't have a balanced side to him, then he's always just a prick. And to have him at least mildly balanced made him watchable in my eyes, which was the first thing. And again, maybe I may be softer on that because I've watched Eastbound and Down and just been like, can you please get off screen?
Like, funnily enough that you say that, because actually I think Eastbound and Down is better than Your Highness. And I don't like Eastbound and Down that much, but at least that actually made me snigger a couple of times. The scene in the first episode where he's talking about their kids' names is a killer. I mean, it's actually a really funny gag. And you sit there and go, okay, if it has moments that can make you laugh at all, that's at least something to hold on to. I did not laugh once in Your Highness, you know? And I just sat there going, wow.
I will say this, in Your Highness's favor, it is the best movie that had ever featured a severed minotaur penis.
Yes. Yes.
That's and funnier than the movie, though.
In the subgenre but movies that feature severed minotaur. I'm not just talking minotaur penis in general. I'm talking severed minotaur penis.
And how can you not find funny that for the rest of the movie, it's just hanging around his neck? I mean, like, that's funny. Come on.
I think it's funny that he thinks it's funny.
Again, I just think that that very concept just makes me laugh. Just the fact that, like, every scene that they're sitting there talking and trying to continue this movie, which is a joke, but trying to be serious, and the whole time you're staring at a giant minotaur penis hanging from his neck.
My big question about this entire film is, what did Natalie Portman think she was doing? Why was she even in this movie?
My wife has a theory about that, that she must have been driving drunk. She clipped somebody.
And, she owed a favor.
It happened in Los Angeles, and so, you know, her community service was to do
Your Highness. Or she clipped a producer, and the producer said, I won't press charges if.
Possibly. Yeah. Possibly.
No, I think realistically you have to balance yourself as an actress. If you do something like Black Swan and everybody thinks you're amazing, you've got to lighten the fuck up, and you've got to do a movie that people are either going to like or hate, because it taints that image, and if it taints that image, you don't get typecasted. You'll get typecasted.
This is the Sandra Bullock theory.
Freak.
You're
probably very close to the truth, but let's...
Ouch!
That's a bit soon. Says, a freak is in our chat room and said, do you think David Carradine topped himself over Big Stan? I think, you know what? I wish Rob Schneider had topped himself over Big Stan.
I think that if Big Stan was in the room, we would have heard about it.
Big Stan was the most unfunny film I've ever been in. I've said this on the show before. I'll say it again because it is worth saying again. We saw Big Stan at a media screening. This is when Jake was doing the show. Jake and I sat there watching it. I kid you not. I am not exaggerating when I tell you that not one laugh, snigger, or smile from any member of the audience the entire run of the film.
That is staggering.
Yeah.
Staggering.
I have never seen a comedy that hasn't appealed to someone. Not one person laughed. I sat there, and at the end of it, Jacob stood up. David Stratton's right in front of us. Jacob stands up, looks at David Stratton, looks at me, and goes, they need to go burn this fucking film and put the ashes out to sea. Oh, no. And then he goes, and put them back in the can and mark it return to sender. Anyway, so yeah, Big Stan was really, really awful, I have to say. Oh, my mouse has decided to not work anymore.
Maybe you've accidentally turned it around?
No, it's the right way around. Okay. That's good. That's going to be really handy for the show when I need to play things. Let's see if I can reset it maybe. Good luck. Here we go. All right, let's try and do this. I have to actually play a clip in just a minute, so I hope it comes back. That would be nice.
Why don't you change the batteries? Is it the battery?
It's got fresh batteries in it. Ah, there it is. Okay, we got it. All right. For some reason, the Bluetooth just decided to kick itself. I've noticed that a little bit lately. It was connecting perfectly. This is the iMac. Just in the last month or so, though, I think there must have been an update or something. The Bluetooth seems to drop out a lot, and I don't know what's going on.
How is that possible, Dave? Macs don't have problems.
I know.
I think we're going to have to save that for next week's show.
Maybe.
He'll bring it back. Don't you worry.
Captain America, the First Avenger is our film for this week. Directed by Joe Johnson, written by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. Also, I just got a quick note here. Apparently also rewritten. There's been apparently a lot of script doctoring uncredited by Joss Whedon. He came in and polished the script. And realistically, when you see this film, you can see Whedon-esque moments all the way through it. So, but he's not in the credits. Based on the Marvel Comics character created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, film stars Chris Evans, Hugo Weaving, Tommy Lee Jones, Stanley Tucci, my heart, Haley Atwell, Sebastian Stan, Dominic Cooper, and Toby Jones. Sorry, I have a real crush on Haley Atwell at the moment. It is 1942. America has entered World War II, and sickly but determined Steve Rogers is frustrated at being rejected yet again for military service. Everything changes when Dr. Erskine recruits him for the secret super soldier program. providing his extraordinary proving his extraordinary courage, wits, and conscience, Rogers undergoes the experiment and his weak body is transformed into a powerful super soldier. When the project is sabotaged by the evil Red Skull's agents, Rogers is left as a unique man who is initially misused as a propaganda mascot. However, when his comrades need him, Rogers goes on a successful adventure that truly makes him Captain America. Along with his best friend Bucky and the Howling Commandos, Captain America sets out to destroy the Red Skull and his evil Hydra organization. How's that one, Josh?
That is far too long.
Yeah, it's over 25 words. The kids will never go for it.
Well, yeah, I try. Okay, okay, and here is the trailer for those who haven't seen this. We played this trailer a few times on the show, I think. Here's the trailer for Captain America.
Rogers, Steven.
Just give me a chance.
Sorry, son.
I'm saving your life.
General Patton has said that wars are fought with weapons, but they are won by men.
You just don't know when to give up, do you?
I could do this all day.
Our goal is to create the greatest army in history.
I should be going with you. Look, I know you don't think I can do this.
This isn't a back alley, Steve. It's war.
But every army begins with one man.
Five tries in five different cities. I can offer you a chance.
He will be the first in a new breed of super soldiers.
Why me? Because the weak man knows the value of strength, knows the value of power.
That wasn't so bad.
That was penicillin.
We are going to win this war because we have the best men.
Now, Mr. Stark.
Nay. Personally, escort Adolf Hitler to the gates of hell.
How do you feel?
Darling.
Your task won't be simple.
Who the hell are you?
The first of many.
Your enemy is not what you expect.
Right.
That is a great trailer.
It's a great trailer.
I want to see that film.
It's a great trailer. We thought that trailer rocked when it first came out. We went, yeah. All right. So let's start off by saying that this is a film that Josh and I were incredibly worried about. This was a film that all the way through when we heard that they were doing Captain America, we thought this is a really, really hard task ahead of Marvel. I mean, this is probably one of the hardest characters to do because he is a walking flag. Mm-hmm. And to make this character actually feel like he's a real person and not just, you know, some sort of patriotic symbol is a really hard thing to do. He is a huge Boy Scout, you know. Mm-hmm. And my question to both of you is, did Joe Johnson pull it off?
Yes. Like, I mean, realistically, the biggest worry that I had about this film was that they either take it too far and it becomes a giant joke, or that they take it not far enough and the film falls flat. Reality is that I had forgotten because we were worried about Joe Johnson as a director.
Yeah.
But realistically, my one qualm with this film is the exact same reason that I love it. Essentially, Joe Johnson was picked because he can do one thing really well. He picked the film and did the film because he's really good at doing a film that isn't too... either way, it's not too heavy duty and it's not too soft. It's just straight down the middle, which means it takes no risks. And because it takes no risks, it can't fail. Like, I mean, they don't take it in any bizarre, you know, sort of directions or take the character into territory that, you know, fans didn't think it was going to go. It's a straight story. It's a very simple story, masked with a whole lot of, you know.
But is that a criticism or is that a, it's both. A positive?
It's both.
See, I don't find that a criticism at all for me. I don't. This is a film where I didn't want it to be a risky film. I didn't want it to go into dark night territory or anything like that. I wanted it to be a really straight telling of Captain America. Continue though. We'll talk about me in a minute.
And all I was saying about that is that, look, I mean, essentially the film didn't wow me. I didn't walk out and I wasn't like, that was fucking amazing. I just walked out and went, yeah, that was good. That was exactly what I wanted. I wanted it to be decent. I wanted it to be good. It's not my favorite one. By far, it's not. Like,
interesting. Okay.
It's probably middle of the road, maybe, you know, sort of under the ones we've already seen. Like, it didn't wow me, is basically what I'm saying here. It's like, but that's perfect because it means that the reactions are not going to be ridiculously the opposite. Like, you're not seeing any threes or fours for this film, really. Like, people aren't out there reacting really heavily to it because it's so right down the middle. It's like I felt no sort of push towards it trying to
when
be
you say three or fours, you mean three or fours out of five?
Yeah, no, out of 10.
Oh, out of 10.
Like,
right.
You know, like no 30% or right. Anything ridiculous.
Well,
like,
we know that. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's sitting at 77%.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Mm. It's not going. It is not the groundbreaking one. It is not the one that told the story. Like, it doesn't have, like, you know, help me out here. Iron Man, just
Robert Downey Jr.?
Robert Downey Jr., you know, dealing with alcoholism or anything like that. Like, the story is basically, you know, it's safe. It doesn't go into any dark territory, like you said. So for that reason, I really love it. But at the same time, it's like, it didn't wow me. It was just exactly what I wanted. Because the thing is, if you fuck this one up, the Avengers won't work. Because Captain America is such a crucial...
He's the leader. He's the linchpin.
Exactly. So. And he's such a crucial character. So it's like, if you went anywhere and failed or missed the mark, then the Avengers falls apart.
Yeah.
So it's like they played a story that they knew would win. They played a story that the new crowds would react to well. And because of that, they got this. And like, it's exactly what I expected it to be.
Fantastic. Sean?
I would agree with most of that. I think it is a very safe movie. It's I think the biggest risk they take is in not portraying the Stars and Stripes patriotism quite as strongly as audiences might expect. Mm. I think that I personally think that's probably one of the strengths of the film is the way they really front load the patriotic angle by having him play
the USO
tour, be the human billboard, the propaganda tool. When he does that first, I shouldn't be spoiling too much of it. By doing that before he really gets to shine as a superhero, it really gets that out of the way. It allows it to not be a problem anymore. Mm. So the rest of the film can then go off in the direction it wants to go, which is pushing the story directly towards the Avengers.
Yeah, and it sells really well at kind of trying to tell the story to people that don't read Captain America. Like me and Selena, both not Captain America fans. Like, I've never really been into the comics, but I really respect the story that they tell with this because it really does work as an eye-opener for, like, I knew this stuff already, but for people that don't know anything about Captain America and literally think he is a walking joke, it kind of helps to sell what Captain America is to the average person. Yes. Because it's like, it's not just about it being Captain America is a walking patriotic flag. It is that the man is the embodiment of what we fought for during that period. It's like the reason that he came to term and the reason that he came to be such a powerful character was because he fought for was essentially good at that time, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why in this film they cover those bases really carefully. And that was an important thing to do.
I think it was a really, really important and really, really smart move from Marvel to actually set this in 1942.
Yeah.
It would have been very easy, like the clip we showed at the beginning of the show, which was from the 1990 Captain America, where we could have shown 15 minutes of World War II, had him frozen, and we're suddenly in the future, right? Mm. And then have Captain America in the future and have him in modern times. Had we made this film 20 years ago, that's exactly what they would have done. That's fact, what they did do, right? Because shooting a period World War II film is really expensive, right? And B, they would have gone, nobody wants to see that. They want to see modern day, right? So to set it in 1942 is a really smart move for a couple of reasons. First of all, in today's climate, being patriotic is almost like a dirty word.
Yeah.
And so if you put Captain America in today's environment and having him go to Iraq and Afghanistan on the USO tour, people would have laughed at this.
Yeah.
And they would have gone, wow, that's in bad taste.
I don't think it's so much dirty as polarizing.
Polarizing. I think there, that's better word.
There's a core, I mean, certainly...
Especially outside of America.
It's a movie made for American audiences, but of course it needs to make half of its money internationally.
Well, actually, that's the thing. It's a movie that's made for a worldwide audience. Had they done it in a modern-day environment, it would have become a movie for American audiences.
That's right.
And the rest of the world would have gone, how dare you make this horrible flag-waving thing, this piece of propaganda, right? By setting it in 1942 was an era where it was okay to be patriotic. In fact, it was celebrated to be patriotic. They had a clearly defined bad guy. They had the Nazis.
That's
the world agreed they were a clearly defined bad guy. The Americans were considered freedom fighters. They were coming in to on the side of right, you know, and all. There was a really different time, right?
Absolutely.
And America was the place of milk and honey at that point. People were killing themselves to get to America and go through Ellis Island. Everybody wanted to be there. It was a really important time to set Captain America in.
Yep.
And so he became this symbol for the Allied forces, right? So, first of all, 1942. Smart move, Marvel. Keep it there. You know what I mean? That's exactly what you want
to
do.
I think really what the other essential point of that is setting it in 1942 and setting it during World War II allows them to have the character of Steve Rogers at the beginning of the film, this scrawny, skinny, weedy little guy. And you can, it gives him the motivation that he would want to join the army with the almost certain idea that he was going to die and make that genuine. If you did that now, that's
yeah. And look, it is not a spoiler to say, and this is what we were saying before, we're going to try not to spoil this film, but there are aspects of the character, of his origin story, that are 40 years old, 50 years old. They're from the comic books. And in fact, the film opens with it, and you're leading there, which is that we know that Captain America is eventually frozen in ice because he has to come back for the Avengers, right? So the inevitable conclusion of this film, and we're not going to spoil how he gets there or what he does or anything like that, but the inevitable conclusion is a foregone conclusion. We know where it's going to go to because he has to get to the modern age at some point, right?
Yeah.
So, all right.
I personally think that's probably the I hate to say this, but it's one of the weaker aspects of the film, really, is that you go along with the ride at the beginning, and the film tells if you think of it in terms of an 85-minute Second World War action movie, it's brilliant. It's really well done. It doesn't take any risks. It doesn't go anywhere unexpected, but it's a very solid World War II action movie. But then there's a bit at the end, which if you're not familiar with what Marvel is trying to do, if you're not a fan of the comic books, if you're not aware of this huge arc they're trying to create, that ending is weak and disappointing.
But once again, it is literally part one to the Avengers. I mean, that's where we're heading.
In a sense, it's part four of a five-part.
Part four, absolutely.
My issue with the ending is, without doing any spoilers at all, is just the fact that the way that they put him where he has to be, I really struggled with.
Yeah,
because as an audience,
everybody did.
Yeah. As an audience member, I went, no, he didn't have to.
Yeah, and that's what I wrote in my review when I wrote it up. And I said, for me, all right, I'll get to my point, which is that I actually absolutely freaking love this film. All right. Now, I am a huge Marvel superhero comic fanboy from way back.
Really?
Right.
I've never known that.
And I love Marvel superheroes, and I love Captain America, and I love the Avengers in particular. I'm a big fan of that team. And for me, this is my favorite Marvel film so far, because this is pure Marvel comics. And when you actually look at this film, this is pure Marvel comic. You know, its setup is perfect. Its exposition is perfect. Its conclusion is perfect. You know, the only problem I had with this film, and it's a really minor niggle, is actually in the very last act of the last part of the last act. And I'm not going to spoil what it is, but there is a slight logic problem. And you sit there and you just go,
for a film that's so incredibly well
put together,
it's just you're like, you couldn't have thought about that for a few seconds
and
longer?
It's a moment where you just sit there and you say, why? And if you have to say why, something's not right there. But as I said in my review, it is a very small niggle in the great scheme of things.
That's true. Yeah,
and as a great overall package, I actually really love this film. Yeah. And one of the things that really worked for me in this film was I thought Chris Evans was fantastic. I thought he was.
He was an attractive man.
He was a darling man. He was Captain America. Period.
Yeah.
End of story. You know? And you sit there and you look at it and go, Chris Evans is a man who has spent his entire career playing cocksure, cocky, brash characters, you know, Scott Pilgrim Saves the World and so forth. And to see him play a character who at his core is incredibly humble, is incredibly polite.
Mm. And insecure.
Insecure and pure. And you sit there, and the fact is that even after he's got all the superpowers and everything else, when something happens, he keeps apologizing to people. He says, thank you. The guy hands him his shield in the middle of combat. He goes, you might need this. And he goes, thanks. And you sit there and go, hey, but you buy every moment of it. Because Chris Evans just completely embodies that character.
It does that very well. I mean, it's not a tremendously rich role. But I think that...
Yet there's subtleties in the role, and this is where it comes down to my love affair with Hayley Atwell at the moment. There is, for me personally, I think that the Hayley Atwell relationship with the Peggy Carter and Steve Rogers relationship is actually one of the best-sold relationships. Wait! It's one of the best-sold relationships in the Marvel films yet, because there is a subtlety to that relationship that is built through the entire film. From the moment she meets him as the scrawny little guy, you can feel an attraction between these two characters. And we won't say where it goes or what happens. And even though, you know, it may not go in the directions you may want it to go in, there is definitely a connection between those two characters. And that is something that was missing with Natalie Portman and Thor. It was something that was missing with Pepper Potts and Tony Stark.
I actually believe that more than I believe this. I'm sorry, Dave. I'm going to completely disagree with you and say she is my biggest problem with this film.
I loved her.
She was flat, and I felt nothing for her.
I disagree.
Yeah. No, she was the January Jones for me. I just looked at her, and I'm like, you act entirely with your face. Like, it's all you're doing. It's just like... the steely coldness of your image is the only thing that you're selling right now. And yes, she plays it how she needs to because that's the kind of person she needs to be. But essentially, it didn't feel like acting to me. It just felt like somebody that has a face that looks like that.
This is where I disagree with you, because I think there is that cold, steely exterior, but I think we see the softer side of her when she's with Steve Rogers. And I think that's what sells that character. You know, I was completely sold on her. I thought she was fabulous.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to side with Josh on this one. I think that Hayley Atwell does a good job with what's there in the role, but I think that the role is... that her character, Peggy Carter, is completely irrelevant to the story. And
they have to set her up because of what happens later on and what I assume would at least have some segment in the Avengers, like the fact that...
Oh, no, I think it's more than just a setup. I think it's giving Steve... it's a growing moment for Steve Rogers. Yeah. He needs her because he doesn't know how to relate to girls and he doesn't
know how... I think that's true.
She's helping him grow, you know?
But I think... really, she's there. There needs to be a woman in the movie, basically, because it's a movie, and you need to.
Peggy Carter is a character from the comic book.
I agree with that. Yeah. But I think that really the what I took from it is that the entire character, her whole role in the film, could simply be removed, and only the single line of dialogue would be damaged by that. Personally, I think that it doesn't bring.
I disagree, because I think if you take her out of the film, you take out a part of the film's heart, and that's what really sells this film, is that Steve Rogers has heart, and the whole Captain America character has that ingrained morals and code and everything else that is going for him, and you need.
I think they just needed. I actually side with Dave on the fact that I think she needed to be there. I think they needed to expand a bit on that. Like, I felt like it wasn't expanded enough on. Like, I personally, by the time that he goes off to the final part of the last scene of the film and they separate up at that moment, I was like, I'm still not sold. Like, I don't believe between the two of them that there's been enough connection to actually sell the moment.
I actually was there with them. I was with that relationship all the way from the beginning. I actually really liked, in particular, I really liked the fact that she wasn't just attracted to him because he was the super soldier. She wasn't attracted to him because he was the super soldier.
Yeah. Like, that was her biggest problem with him, was the fact that he was the super
soldier. Well, that's right. Soldier. And the fact is that there's that scene in the car when they're driving to the experiment and she's talking about how he doesn't know anything about girls. There's a really nice moment between them. And once again, it's a really subtle performance. It's a really subtle subtle relationship between these two characters. Mm. And I've seen the film twice now. So when you really watch what's going on, there's a lot of looking, there's a lot of little moments where there's these little asides, and it's actually very, very subtle. It may actually be too subtle for a big summer film. That's the problem. And that may be one of the issues, but it's actually a really subtle connection between these two characters that is formed when he's the little weedy guy. And that's what's so nice about it. It's that feeling.
Oh, yeah, and I was on board at that stage. My problem is the later on bits I didn't get into. I thought they were cute back then. And it's like from then on in the movie, I was like, you're not spending enough time developing it. One shot and one slight facial glance isn't enough for me to be like, yep, okay, cool, you guys are together, because I didn't believe the relationship clearly
enough.
That's
fair enough. We will agree to disagree on this. What do we think of the other characters, though? Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving was definitely better than average. Still not my favorite character. No, look. I didn't want him to be the biggest problem I have with people that aren't German trying to do a German accent is that everything has to be over-Germanized. You know, it's like...
You know what I felt with Hugo Weaving? I felt that it was Agent Smith...
Yeah,
channeled through Werner Herzog.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's a collection of people I can deal with. And like, he does a great job. And I mean, Red Skull is one of those characters. He is a very thinking character. And a good friend of ours, Cullen, brought up the interesting point that he was like, to what Captain America is, which, and I won't use that word again because it sets people off, but not so much brawn, but he is the power. He is like... He's the guy that goes out there and gets things done.
Yeah.
To the opposite end of that is supposed to be Red Skull's intelligence, and he is viciously intelligent. Like, that is his thing. And the fact that they have a punch on was kind of almost like, hold up, no. It'd be like he'd go to punch him, and then he'd get caught in a trap or something. Like, you know, he's five steps ahead of...
Although he does have punch-ups with Captain America.
No, absolutely.
He is still as strong as Captain America.
Exactly. But he would rather use the brains over the thing, and it's like when you don't have such a big arc...
Well, there's that great line in it where he says, if you're so good, why are you running away? Because the Red Skull just goes, I'm leaving.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like he's the, you know, he who fights and runs away kind of character. Like, that was his whole thing. And it's like, I love, especially when you get into Civil War and stuff like that, like Red Skull's character is so intelligent. He plans everything, you know. I don't know. I mean, like, that again, it's the small things. And you know that you've got a reasonably decent film on your hands when all people can pick at it is these tiny little things.
Yeah,
it's like there's no gaping holes apart from the ending, and the ending is still fits and suits what needs to happen.
The ending works.
Yeah.
It's just one line of dialogue
could
have completely taken away all questions.
Yeah.
That's all they need. Yeah. One line of dialogue and it would have been fixed.
Yeah.
So it's just this, you'll see it when you see the film, and you'll sit there and in the last scene, you're just going to go, why?
Yeah.
And that's the beginning. Even my wife, who is not a big film lover or anything. film lover. We walked out of the movie and she went, why? And she asked the same question I asked. So it's like everybody's going to ask that question, which is why? And we can't go any further without giving spoilers, but that's the question.
Try to put this into the review. In order to really enjoy the film, if you're not a fan of Captain America and if you don't know that this is part of a huge series of films, in order to enjoy the movie, you really have to think of it as a fantastic 2-hour movie with a 5-minute ad for another movie at the end of it.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. Look, and we all know the Avengers is coming, so we're all looking forward. And I am freaking dying for the Avengers movie, so I can't wait till next year. But look, bottom line is, I watched this movie at a media screening. I really enjoyed it. I found myself smiling through the whole film, so I found myself sitting there going, yay, you know? Hmm. But what's interesting is, and I actually tweeted this a couple of days later, I actually found myself loving the film even more.
That's interesting.
And so I sat there because I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about what they did right about this film and how it all worked. And I actually found myself going, actually, I really love this film, you know, and it actually worked up to it. And then I saw it again on Thursday. So 3 days later, I saw it again. And I found myself bolt upright in the chair, paying attention to everything in the film. And I just found myself just loving the film a second time around. And the fact that I'm sitting there with my 12-year-old who is literally giddy with excitement. I mean, he's bouncing out of his chair at this film. And I just, you know, for me, I think this is, for me personally, and for the little geek, obviously, it's Marvel's Ace in the Hole. This is, for me, this is where you go, you did it. You nailed a comic book to film. You know, this is a comic book put on film, and you've done it absolutely perfect.
And in that sense, it's a film that you can watch over and over because it doesn't take any, like we said, it doesn't take much risks. Yeah. It tells a particular story exactly the way you expect it to. It's a kind of film you can enjoy again.
Look,
and
as
again.
Far as 40s style adventure films go, this is the film that Indiana Jones and the Temple and the Crystal Skulls. Yeah. Should have been.
That's,
you know what I mean? This is what they were trying to go for. And you know, and this is what they failed dismally at. This is a good old-fashioned, old-time. If you like The Rocketeer, you're going to just be blown away by Captain America. It's the same style of film. Now, 3D. The film is being presented in 3D, and I had two experiences with 3D. We saw it at Event Cinemas, and the 3D didn't actually blow me away very much. And I actually watched it going, well, first of all, we're going to come back to this question. When did they make the decision to 3D convert this film? Which was the first question that I had, because in all of the pre-press, when it was first getting put together, Thor was going to be 3D, Captain America.
Mm.
They never talked about it. It was not like the big issue. Suddenly it came out, and then the last set of posters that came out, it started to carry the in 3D. Yeah, and it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And my first thought was, oh God, this is going to be a rush conversion job. It's going to look like shit.
Yeah.
And I have to say the 3D was actually pretty good. It actually held up pretty well. In fact, on second viewing, I actually had a much better 3D experience. I've actually decided that I don't think Event Cinema's 3D projectors are calibrated very well because I've seen a few films in 3D, including Transformers and so forth, and I'm always getting like ghosted images and a few other issues with that. Mm. And with Captain America, the 3D didn't wow me. Mm. I saw it at the Ritz again on Thursday at Cinema One in the Ritz. And the 3D was really sharp.
Yeah.
And the 3D was actually, now seeing it at the Ritz, I'm going to go on a limb and say it's probably the best 3D conversion I've ever seen.
I think that's true. Yeah.
It's a pretty damn good 3D conversion.
I think it's because it doesn't. There's no 3D moment that ruins it. There's no point.
There's one scene in it where you kind of go, okay, that was meant for 3D. It's where he throws his shield straight at screen. But other than that, they don't go for 3D gimmicks.
Mm. No, that's right. They do that, I think, twice in the film. Mm-hmm. But it's only that joke, and they only do it twice, and they do it very well those two times. It jolts you out of your seat that the if you're familiar at all with Captain America, of course, the big gag of him is being able to throw his shield like a boomerang.
Yeah.
Mm. And so,
well, he bounces it off things.
And when you finally see that in action.
I have an issue with that, though, logically. And this is actually an issue I have with the comic book. It's an issue I have with the comic book as well. It's an issue. The shield is made of vibranium. It actually nullifies all vibration. So that's notice when she shoots the bullets, they don't ricochet. They just literally fall to the ground, right? Mm. When he throws his shield and he hits a wall, wouldn't it just stop?
Maybe it's the spinning momentum, not the bouncing momentum.
But that's not a criticism of the film. That's just a criticism of the actual
of the concept. Yeah. But I think, like I said, the 3D conversion is done very, very well.
Yeah.
It's very, very smooth. It's almost it's almost not there for a lot of the film. I think there's a series of depth to the film.
Yeah,
there's large portions of the film where there's no gimmicks. There's no dramatic foreground background. It's just a normal film that just happens to have
That's actually what I thought before I saw it a second time. And the second viewing. That shot where they're coming down the steps at the expo at the beginning, you know, when it's got the recruiting station, that is incredibly deep. Mm. And I sat there looking at it going, wow, I didn't see that the first time I saw it. And another shot is when they're in the factory, having the big fight in the factory at the end. There is so much, because there's so much foreground, middle ground, and background action happening in that scene. There's incredible depth to that scene, which, once again, I didn't pick up at Event Cinemas.
That's interesting. It's interesting,
you know.
I think the 3D really comes into its own in the final sort of push of the film. That point in the film where not to give anything away, it's the questions are resolved and the mission is set and they just go for it.
Yeah.
It starts with a motorcycle chase.
Yep.
And then from then on, it's just basically chase sequence, action sequence, chase sequence, action sequence until the very end of the film, and all of that is done incredibly well. The 3D brings you into that. The motorcycle scene is wonderful. Especially, you would expect that to be a scene where the 3D conversion would be most difficult and probably not work very well. But it does, and it really brings you in. It lets you're practically riding the motorcycles along with them. And through the rest of it, it just works properly, which is what it's meant to do. And it's the... the first really good example of a film where the 3D is done just right without needing to be flashy or selling point of the film.
I agree. All right, so let's wrap.
Sorry, it was such a good point. It kind of
stumped us. Yeah, we're all like, there we go. That's it. I have nothing more to add.
To mention though. This is the thing I probably spent most of the time in my review on. I think the real highlight of the film for me, in a sense, was the first sequence which you see in the trailer where Steve Rogers is thin and scrawny.
Yeah,
and it's done so well that it actually crosses into the uncanny valley that we were talking about in the Geek podcast.
What I actually found with it was, for the first 2 or 3 minutes of it, you sit there and go, wow, that's weird looking.
Mm. Yes.
And then you just accept it.
That's right. And that's probably the most brilliant part of the film for me in terms of risk-taking, in terms of modern filmmaking, was being able to create that character.
Yeah.
And it's really a separate character. The youngest, smaller Steve Rogers is a separate character to the later Captain America. And to be able to sell that visually and to be able to tell a story with him moving around, you know, interacting, having a lot of movement.
I mean, he's in basic training, and and you sit there and go, that is an amazing piece of computer work. That is another actor and a computerized, miniaturized head and married perfectly.
Interestingly enough, a lot of that actually isn't another actor. That's the genius of it is that Chris Evans didn't want to simply be a talking head on top of another actor's body. He wanted as many of those shots as possible to be him.
Mm.
So they had him in outsized clothes. They had him in an outsized helmet.
And they also used that. They went to a company that specialized in basically miniaturizing down. And they took him and they literally reduced his scale.
That is truly astonishing to see that realized and to see it realized so well is to my sort of movie geek mind is the real. The real trick of the film, the selling point of the film, is just how well they used another actor.
Whereas the bare torso shots, because they had to have that thin little body as well.
That's right.
So they used a bare torso. They used a different actor, and they also had a different actor for shots for people's eye lines and stuff like that. So when they were shooting broad shots, they had to have eye lines and what have you. Mm. No, I agree. I think that was actually one of the triumphs of this film is to pull that off. It makes Benjamin Button look positively archaic.
It does, yeah, and it really. What it really does is sell that transformation. I mean, the whole point of it is to create that transformation scene and to really sell that and to really sell the idea that, you know, this is the little weedy guy who suddenly becomes a super soldier and isn't that guy normally. He doesn't go through training.
Well, it's like if you watch the original 1990 Captain America movie, it's the same actor as Steve Rogers. It's the same actor as Captain. It's like he just gets a few injections and it's like, aha, I am a super soldier. It's like, this feels like a transformation.
Yeah, it doesn't have that Clark Kent problem where, you know, it's easy in the comic books to draw Clark Kent and then have Superman be somebody else. But in a movie, you can't do that. And this film, they actually managed to do it. They've got a Clark Kent that is completely different to the eventual Superman.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. All right, let's wrap this up because we've got some news to do. As we like to ask on this show, Josh, would you recommend it to anybody?
Yeah, absolutely. I think number one, because everybody needs to see the full amount.
Yeah.
Also the whole series of these Marvel films to lead up to what will be the Avengers. Mm. To see the trailer is very exciting at the end of the thing as well.
Spoiler!
Actually,
that's online. We know.
No, it's online and now it's basically separate as well. Like, you can actually find it as the trailer now. So it's and also it's not a spoiler. In my opinion, it's like if it was a scene or it was something important storyline driven. No.
Yeah, they've actually officially released. They haven't released the whole trailer. What they've done is they've done a cut down.
Yeah.
So if you go online, you can actually, Marvel has officially released the last scene of the film, followed by a cut down of the trailer.
That I think is a really smart move, and I think that's probably to combat what I was talking about before. That it's, if you're not familiar with the story, if you're not familiar with the oeuvre, the ending is really weird and disappointing. It stops so abruptly. If you look at it as a complete movie, it stops really suddenly.
Yeah.
But it really it's
well. With the movie, there is a definite ending to the movie.
Yeah.
And then there's another 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, or something else that is something that is trying to sell you on something else.
Yeah. And look, I mean, you get moments and flashes of kind of winks about the fact that there will be problems between the group and stuff like this. And I love that. And I think that if nothing else, to get ready for the next film, like this is the main reason why it's exciting. It's just that now that there is no failure film, you know, like no film that actually sucks, you can now literally as a fan be proud to sell people what is leading up to the Avengers. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't matter if the Avengers
is bad.
Now, wouldn't
it be funny if the Avengers just sucked?
You know what? And but it won't matter because every one of those characters individually stands up on their own grounds. Absolutely. And it's like, look, we can have faith or we cannot, but it doesn't matter anymore because realistically we've got a troop of really good films now.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters to me. Now, Marvel can take it in any direction they want because we know Marvel films can work.
Yeah. Now, just to recap, for those who are listening, we're talking about the Marvel films that are actually produced by Marvel. So the films leading up to the Avengers are Incredible Hulk and Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Thor, and Captain America. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So that's the lead up to the Avengers. Now it's all ahead for the Avengers.
They have also announced, or I'm not sure if they've Marvel have announced it, but the screenwriter for Captain America has said that he's working on Captain America 2.
Right, already. And there's also there's also talk that they Marvel also wants to get into production Namor the First Mutant.
Hawkeye,
a standalone Hawkeye movie, and Edgar Wright came out this week and basically said he is back to work on Ant-Man. So that is happening. So we'll see what happens with Marvel in the future. All right. I would say yes, wholeheartedly, go enjoy it. If you just go with it as just a straight old action film, straight old adventure film, go have fun. You know, this is just a romp, you know, and it's I had so much fun watching it and I had so much fun thinking about it later and I cannot wait for it to come out on Blu-ray. So, and I will probably see it again at the cinema before it finishes because I really just enjoyed it.
Nice.
I would certainly recommend it. I'd recommend it the same way I recommend Back to the Future 2, that you have to be aware that there's a Back to the Future 3. When you see it's like I said before, it's a fantastic old school action movie with an advertisement for another film at the end.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. We're going to move into some entertainment news. We're probably going to have to cut a couple of these stories because we're running a little bit late. But we will run this trailer straight away because we've been talking about this film for a long time and we finally get to see some footage. And all I can say is I showed this to my 12-year-old last night and his first reaction was, that doesn't look anything like the game. And I'm talking, of course, of the Battleship movie. So here is the trailer for Battleship.
You ready for this?
I'm going to walk up to him, look him right in the eyes.
What are you going to say?
Your daughter is the best thing that has happened to me in my entire life. It would be an honor to have your permission to marry her.
What is wrong with you?
You went from enlisted to an officer faster than anyone in the history of the United States Navy. But I have never, ever seen a man waste himself better than you.
What my daughter sees in you is a great mystery to me. Enjoy these naval exercises, Hopper. They're likely to be your last.
What the heck is that?
Got an unknown surface contact.
Bridge TO, I've got nothing on the scope.
Let's get a team in a rip to investigate this thing.
Hopper, you're on it.
Copy, sir.
Sir, which weapons?
All of them.
Looks like Transformers to me.
That is mind-blowingly shit. Like, it's just like, you're like looking at it, and especially the shot where it's like the three ships and then the bullets that are like red pegs. I'm like, what?
Now, my question is, why...
Is it in 3D? That's the question
I
had.
Yes, I believe it is. No, and why the hell did they have to option the game Battleship to make this movie, which bears no resemblance... They could have made this film and called it Battleship, and still wouldn't have been sued.
I think it's because, like, you get those shots with, like, the long thing of the people on opposite sides of the thing. It's like they're trying to go...
And the fact that he goes, my radar is down, which means fire at random, you know?
Yeah. I think really that it's actually... You've got it slightly backwards. I think that somebody bought the Battleship license and then said,
what the fuck
are
we doing?
How are we going to make a movie out of this? And then someone said, hey, let's just make a Transformers movie. And we'll call it Battleship.
You know,
and
Peter Berg is a better director than this material would let on.
Who knows? Maybe it'll be award-winning.
I doubt it. And Liam Neeson. What is Liam Neeson slumming it?
Liam Neeson... Yeah, we've been through this. It's just not good.
All right. So,
he's a man experiencing loss. It is what it is. It's
made you speechless, hasn't it?
It's ridiculous, but I mean, it's fun. And the only reason that like anybody is annoyed about it at all is that it's called Battleship.
I think Callison has summed it up. Callison in our chat room has said that movie will be worth every penny with a well placed use of "You sunk my battleship."
That is for sure going to happen. It's going to be that.
You know what it'll be? It'll be like he'll be standing on the front of a battleship when like one of those ships comes up, and like one of the other ships will be down. And it'll be like, "You sunk my battleship," and then like punch it and
that's the.
You know what's wrong with this film? There's a distinct lack of Will Smith. Will Smith could make this film work. We saw him do Independence Day, and without him, Independence Day would not have worked.
Hell yes!
Taylor Kitsch is not Will Smith. Exactly. I think, to be honest, Liam Neeson is in the film to give that line. He'll be the one who says, "You sunk my battleship," the same way he's in...
Or he'll do it on the radio? Like, that's just... Oh, man, there's so much about this film.
I really am not looking forward to this movie. When Real Steel came out and they're basically saying they were making a movie of Rock'em Sock'em Robots, I went, oh, God, why? And then the trailer came out and I went, actually, I wouldn't mind seeing that because she looks kind of fun. This... It's the same reaction, but now I've seen the trailer. I really don't want to see this.
I have a theory about this. I think this is the new indie. I think that this is an entirely new category of filmmaking. This is guerrilla filmmaking, where filmmakers come up with an idea and they say, I want to make this movie, but no one's going to give me $200 million to make it. I'll get them to think that it's a battleship movie.
That's like they're doing the film version of Asteroids. We just heard that they've just optioned Space Invaders.
I'm sorry.
The mind boggles. Could you imagine? Yeah. I'm going to see Space Invaders. You sit there for 2 hours with bum.
I think it's an abstract level of film marketing that is so.
I love the words this man uses to describe
it's so completely beyond the actual experience of making or watching the film that it's irrelevant. Yeah. It's an argument in a boardroom about how are we going to sell this movie. Oh, if
they sat there in a challenge. Boardroom playing Battleship.
That's right.
No, dude, I actually really look forward to seeing this film because it's one of those films we all go and see because we're all film fans and we just want to see how bad it can possibly be.
How can they do it? Yeah.
It's watching a video about a train crash or something like that.
It's next year's Transformers. It's the same with Battle Los Angeles.
I agree,
the film that you're going to see, even though you will hate it. Mm. There's a filmmaker inside you.
Do you know the worst part
you,
of this entire discussion is? The worst part of this entire discussion is this film is going to make $500 million.
You reckon?
Yes.
All right.
Just like Transformers, the first Transformers. This film's going to come out and everybody's going to go, oh, that was so cool. And they're going to put their money down and worldwide it's going to make $500 million. And they're going to say, look, it was a success. Let's go option more board games.
Mm. Let's get Monopoly up in this movie.
It's already been optioned.
Yeah. No, dude, that movie's going to be amazing. It's going to be like Boardwalk Empire.
And my favorite one is the one that Ridley Scott owns. Ridley Scott is actually planning the film version of Candyland.
Oh, yes. That's going to be amazing. I'm with him.
Tim Burton needs to direct that.
Oh, God.
Don't
you
think Candyland?
No.
Then essentially we'll just get another version of freaking
Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, it'll be the same film.
Hey, Josh.
Yes.
You know how I was really disappointed by the end of Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Have you heard the news?
Yeah.
Frank Darabont's just walked away from Walking
Dead.
Exactly,
which makes me think that my argument about the end of last series is true, which is that they're not going to take this in a better direction. They're not going to make it go anywhere.
Now,
he's obviously... I know his reason for leaving, but I reckon his real reason for leaving is it's going to be shit.
Yeah, apparently, according to press, his reason for leaving was that he wasn't prepared for the daily grind of a TV series because he comes from feature films. Mm-hmm. And that he basically has to move on.
Yeah.
I don't believe him. I have a feeling that he wants to go in one direction with this series, and I think AMC's pushing back.
Yeah.
So now I saw the promo trailer. It's online. You can get it. It's 4 minutes long. It's the promo trailer for season two.
Mm.
And let me tell you, if you thought the last three episodes of season one bared no relationship to the comic book at all, season two is way out there.
Yeah,
it is so not related to the comic
project
books in any
and
way.
This is what we talked about with season one. He started the projects going in the direction, and he was happy to let it change and become its own thing, because Frank Darabont is the kind of person who has an open mind, and he's willing to go, all right, this isn't where the comic went, but let's see where you're going to go with it, right? I think by season two, he's kind of realized, right, so you're planning to fuck the show, I'm out.
Yeah, and look, quite frankly, season two looks exactly like season one.
Yeah, I know.
It really, I see no pitch difference, no tone difference.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm very disappointed with
that. And I don't think it's going to be good. I will say that, and you know that I was the one that was like, I didn't mind season one.
I think, though, that you guys are missing the gold that is hidden
underneath. Here we go.
Just underneath this little bit of news. In the subtext of this story, Frank Darabont quitting the show means that Stephen King has written another prison novel.
Frank
needs to free himself up to make that film.
Or we now heard that Ron Howard's Dark Tower series has all fallen apart. Maybe Frank Darabont's going to take a shot.
Dude, I would watch that shit.
Me too.
I would watch that.
All right. Let's move on and have a look at that that trailer. We're running out of time here, aren't we? We're going to have to cut ourselves a bit short here. Where are we?
Just cut it all out. Let's just leave.
No, we can't because we've already announced that we're going to do a couple of trailers here. All right, let's do this trailer for Tower Heist. Let's do this trailer.
Do it.
Wait. I would. Oh, yeah, here it is. Okay, here's Tower Heist.
The average apartment in the tower costs $5.6 million. We have the best views, most advanced security systems, but you know what these people are really buying?
White neighbors?
Us, the staff, to pay for our full and undivided attention 7 days a week.
And Enrique, one other thing. I may have my own private island in Belize, but deep down, I'm just an Astoria boy like Josh here.
That's right, ES-104. Go Lions.
Just an hour ago, the tower's richest resident was released into federal custody under house arrest here at his penthouse apartment.
Several years ago, he was asked to manage all of your pensions. Right now, they're saying that anyone who invested with Mr. Shaw has been defrauded.
Did he get your money, too?
Yeah, he did.
If you need me, I'll be living in this box.
All these guys keep cash close by, but we still haven't found Shaw's safety net. $20 million in change.
So you're saying you want to rob Arthur Shaw? It's inside a building that has the most advanced security and is guarded by FBI agents 24 hours a day. We're not criminals. We don't know how to steal.
Don't worry. I know someone who does.
You made bail.
How come you bailed me out? Man, I don't even know your name. You don't remember Mrs. Salzberg? We used to get dropped off at her apartment every morning for daycare. Come on. Heavy-set German woman, short goatee.
You're a little seizure boy that's having them seizures all the time.
No. You would have seizures on a regular basis. All the kids would be crying and your eyes are rolling back and the foam and coming out.
No,
it was very scary.
Asthma doesn't cause seizures.
Why'd you bail me out? Because I have a job.
Oh, little seizure boy want to try to rob somebody, huh? What you trying to steal?
$20 million. A robbery can change very quickly. You have to be ready to adapt to the situation at any moment.
I got your ski hats.
No, masks. I said ski masks.
But the guy said these would keep us the warmest.
Anything can happen. I was on a job a few days ago. Got shot in the face. Get shot in the head, it's over. If you get shot in your head, it's over. If you get shot in your face, the bullet will go in your cheek, then come out the other side. Then what you gonna do?
Die. I'm gonna die.
You people are working stiffs. Clock punchers. Easily replaced.
I don't care what it takes, but we'll find a way to make things right.
Gone rogue.
Come
know this is a bad idea, right? That's it. I don't want you talking to me for the rest of the robbery.
First thing you do, you gotta find the entry point. You gotta use your fingers when you find the entry point. You married?
No, I ain't married. What's up? Come on, get it!
All right, look. Brett Ratner's had a bad run of late. By the way, that film we were trying to remember was After the Sunset.
Yeah,
this looks a lot like After the Sunset. It looks like it's one of those good old fashioned fun heist films.
Yeah,
and Eddie Murphy is doing 48 Hours again.
This I know is, yeah. this it's is taking great.
Right back, you know,
and look, I mean, everybody's been saying, when are we going to get Eddie Murphy back? This may be the chance. So anyone that liked old Eddie Murphy, we should all go see this film.
And what a cast!
And Matthew Broderick, if he fucks Alan this Alden. Up, yeah. we write him off for good.
All right, fair enough. We'll
He's
do that.
He's done. That's it.
He's dead to us.
You've got one chance, man. I saw me, Dave, and you owe me. Callison for that film.
Eddie Murphy and Alan Alda equals win.
Yeah. Brett Ratner is an action director. I mean, that's really all he does. He's like a second unit director, really.
Yeah.
What he needs is a cast. And he's got it in this film.
He's got a great cast. As long as he's got a good script to work with, he suffers one of the same problems that Michael Bay is, which he doesn't know a good script if it comes up and bites him in the ass.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't know if it's bad. If he's got the good script to go with, he can work with
That's
it.
That's right.
He won't be able to correct it if it's bad. That's
there
the
is
problem.
The one thing that Brett Ratner can do better than Michael Bay is that he knows how to let his actors just do what they do.
Yeah,
Michael Bay cannot do that. Which
also,
is
Brett Ratner has a better sense of humor. Michael Bay is humorless.
When
humor always feels a little bit forced in a Michael Bay film. And
he's German when it comes to humor.
He is a bit. This is funny when you consider that his first feature film was Bad Boys, which was actually quite funny, but he let funny people do it, you know? But if you look at the humor in the Transformers films, it feels forced. You know, it feels like it's really trying too hard to be funny.
When you think about it, Bad Boys is a mistaken identity comedy that... Like, he just got handed, and he turned it into an action movie, because that's what Michael Bay does. He's an action director, and that's all he knows how to do.
Yeah. Mm.
He just happened to have two funny guys in there.
And a good female lead, Tia Leone, who happens to be also in this. So, you know, I think Bad Boys was a complete fluke out for him, and it really put him on the map, because it was a huge hit.
Yeah.
And he's been struggling to try and regain that ever since. Anyway, all right, talk about a confusing case. Joe Pesci was originally hired to be in this new Gotti film that's coming out. And so Martin Scorsese was attached to it, apparently. So he started putting weight on because he had to put on like 30, 40 pounds or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So he's putting on all the weight. Scorsese walks away. Another director comes in. Basically, he no longer has the part that he was going for. Now he's suing, saying, but I put on all the weight. You know what I mean? And he's basically been offered another part. And, you know, it's a really stupid case, because basically the studio is saying no contracts were signed. This was an act of faith, you know, and you have been offered a role in the film now with the new director, but you don't want that. You want the other role. You've been putting on the weight. And basically they said, when the director got fired, maybe you should have stopped eating. You know, it's like, you know, so we wait to see what happens. And apparently Joe Pesci's a balloon at the moment. So
I think that this is the weird, tortured end of this strange Hollywood system of pay or play contracts.
Yeah.
Where they get paid even if, you know, once you've signed something, you get
really
paid.
Big in the 80s and the 90s.
And it's still around. And so this is why actors can go, in some cases, years between films. Because there's money coming in all the time.
Well, Chuck Norris was famous. Chuck Norris actually had, I think it was a 5-picture deal with Canon, the Golden Globus company. And it was like he was paid something upfront. This is in the 80s, so it was a great deal of money. But he was paid like $5 million upfront for the 5 films. And I don't even think they were all made in the end. But he was paid whether the films were made or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And these sort of deals happen all over the place where they just throw money at people. But in this particular case, I think the studio may have a case. I think they may have kind of went, you know what? Slow down, dude.
Yeah.
I think as well, this is, you have to think that actors know if they sue somebody, that's it. And if one in the Hollywood system is so,
tight, so close-knit.
You sue somebody, that's it. I mean, look, it stole The Hobbit for like 5 years.
Well, also the fact that MGM had no money.
one of the things that put The Hobbit into limbo for years was Peter Jackson thought that he didn't get enough money out of the Lord of the Rings movies, and he sued to say, hey, you know, you're about $10-12 million short here. And the guy who ran, was it? Which company
Shea.
Was it?
It was New Line.
Yeah. Said, I'm never going to work with him again. And he said it publicly.
Yeah.
And so that cost them a
couple but then
of
what
years.
Happens is that the Hobbit's rights were not the same rights as Lord of the
Rings. Yeah, there was a
Hobbit
lot of...
was actually owned by MGM.
Yeah.
So suddenly they had to make a deal with MGM. New Line had to make a deal with MGM to be able to bring this into the vault. MGM turns around and says, you can have the rights of the Hobbit only if Peter Jackson's involved. And, and then basically New Line has to come to the party.
Slowly worked their way back up to where they should have been in the first place.
Yeah, and now it's all underway and it's going and it's going to be freaking amazing because it's shot at 48 frames a second in full native 3D.
No.
Oh, God. All right. So we'll come back to that when it comes out next year. We're going to skip with that trailer because we don't need that one. But I do want to talk about this really quickly because this made me laugh. The double standards of Comic-Con dress code. We've been to... Supernova here. Comic-Con's even worse, okay? This model, she's the person, she's on screen now. She won,
the first season of America's Next Top Model.
Thank you, that's the one. Yep. America's Top Model. This is the costume. This is the offending costume that she's wearing right here. She was dressed as Aeon Flux, and she was kicked out of Comic-Con in San Diego this year because they felt that it was too revealing. Her backside was too revealing. And there are actually photos of her now on Google if you look where she actually puts a red jumper around her waist and she's actually wearing a red jumper for the rest of Comic-Con. She was kicked out of Comic-Con.
Aww.
Now, the double standards comes here. This was a woman who was in costume at Comic-Con and she wasn't kicked out. All right, now this is a woman whose costume is Khaleesi from the final scene of Game of Thrones. Now, she's not actually naked. Those are fake nipples.
Well, that's all right then.
So she has a little dragon tied around her waist to cover her nether parts and two fake nipples. And she was allowed in.
So this
is the double standards of...
I agree with Sweet Pea, though. That is incredibly gross.
Yeah, well, yeah. Any chance to get nudity on the show, though, you know what it's like. Okay. We got one more trailer, and then we're going to do our list of five. But I have to show this trailer. Josh, here it comes. Kevin Smith, Red State, Red Band trailer.
What is this, man?
It's like Craigslist for people who want to get fucked.
I thought Craigslist was Craigslist for people who want to get fucked. Right.
We're getting laid, boys.
She wants all three of us at the same time.
It's gonna be like fucking my mom.
This is what happens when parents block porn sites, man. They make socially backwards kids.
Bet you boys want to get up to the devil's business, don't you?
Forget drinking, because I ain't drinking alone. I don't let no man in me unless it's got at least two beers in.
Yes, ma'am.
Fuck!
Guys, is that you, Travis?
Welcome, family.
Good evening.
Good evening, Grandpa.
I hate the wickedness of America. Rampant fornication, adultery, abortion, flagrant sexuality. Everywhere.
Hey, you fucking bitch! Let me the fuck out of here!
And it's up to the righteous to curb the spread of this disease. You might take children out now. Get grown up in here.
Santa sent him straight to hell. Santa sent him straight to hell.
God doesn't love you. Less fear.
Yes, sir. It's dawn here now, but we can be fully mobilized and on site in an hour.
Come out with your hands up, and you will not be harmed. Repeat, you will not be harmed.
I think it's the use of the word repeat that makes this work every time.
I never saw the hand of God so clearly in all my born days.
Those government people, they're gonna kill you too. You get down on your knees and pray.
You said this was going to be a simple in and out, sir. Simple just shit itself.
Talk about fear of God. I fear God. You better believe I fear God.
How much do you think a cross like that costs?
You mean the dollars or common sense?
Oh, there's a couple of lines in there that I love. I love when he says, how much do you think a cross like that would cost? He goes, what, in dollars or common sense? And the other thing, I love that cash line, things are about to get biblical.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how much I'm waiting for this film. I also love that Michael Parks line when he says, can you take the children out of here? Things are going to get all grown up. yeah, look, it's finally get an Australian release. Apparently it's coming out in September. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. Bring it on is all I can say. All right. Our list of five this week is, I forgot to ask you guys. Yes? Yes? No?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah?
Still holding up to for you, Josh?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's, you know, the trailer's cut together really oddly, and I think he did it himself. Am I correct?
He's done all of it himself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. And, like, it's like, you know, could have done with a lather of extra, you know, paint. But, look, I mean, the movie itself.
You could actually use that phrase against all Kevin Smith films.
Like, exactly, but this is what I'm saying. I'm not, yeah. Either way, I'm not, you know, worried. I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I'm dying to see it. Also, he has tightened the film up a little bit, apparently, in its original Sundance. Yeah. His original Sundance screening, he actually realized that it needed to have about 10 minutes shaved out of it. And so he's actually it's all himself. Nobody said anything. He just said, you know, it just needs to be tightened. And so apparently the version we're going to get will be a slightly tighter version than what was shown at Sundance. All right, so...
certainly the first time I've been interested in a Kevin Smith movie, and I can't even begin to estimate
how... I was talking to Jorge from Spotlight Report last night, and I was saying I think it's really funny that Kevin Smith, who has always declared that he's never been a very good director, he's always been a writer, and then he directs his own stuff and blah, and he's finally turned around and made a film where you go, wow, we can actually see the director in you, and now he retires.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, he goes, I'm done. Anyway, so you got one more film after this, and we'll see it. All right, our list of five this week, we're going to kick through this pretty fast. This list was actually brought to us by Sean.
That's me.
And he said, let's do a list of five classic movies you would like to see converted to 3D. And I went, that's a very interesting list, but I have to start it with a caveat. And the caveat is, we don't really want to see any of these films converted to 3D. I would really not like to go that play it, because I don't really want to see all those old films messed with. But if they're going to do them anyway, these are the ones that we'd want to see.
Sure.
Okay?
Well, I think you should go first.
Oh, you want me to go first?
Warm up.
All right. Where's my list? I got to find my list first. Hold on.
Josh, what's your list?
No, it's here. It's all right. I'm done. All right, here we go. All right. My number five on this list is Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane?
Yeah. Okay. And the reason why I think Citizen Kane is because Citizen Kane worked with depth. The entire film was about long...
There's six movies on your list, dude.
Sorry?
There's six movies on your list.
Yeah, no, there's actually 10 movies on my list.
All right. Okay.
Overachiever.
Sorry.
Citizen Kane, I think, is a film where he actually experimented with universal focus, very long, deep shots. Yeah. And all I can think is, if you're going to convert a film to 3D, that would be the perfect choice.
Because Orson Welles actually practically invented the concept of deep focus.
Yes.
It's brilliant. And
Citizen Kane was the first film ever where they built ceilings on sets.
That's
because
right,
he wanted to be able to shoot from the ground all the way up to the ceiling of these things. Yeah. And they basically said, where are we going to hang the lights? But they did it. They worked it out.
And he still managed to get the incredible amount of light he needed on set
fantastically, beautifully photographed film. And if we're going to see anything converted to 3D, I'd like to see that converted to 3D.
Completely agree.
Number five, Sean.
Just crossed off Citizen Kane. I would love to see Jet Li's Hero. The reason, I mean, there are a whole bunch of kung fu style action movies that could be interesting if done in 3D. But Hero is a beautiful movie, and it's done with such incredible attention to detail there's so much depth and so much visual information in the film that having it actually be in 3D would lift it and would give it
how would the conversion handle doing like those walls of arrows coming in and stuff like that?
That would be challenging.
There is another film I just thought of which could go on this list, but I won't mention it just in case either of you have got it on your list. But at the end, remind me that I just thought of one in relation to Hero.
Okay.
Josh, number five.
Sorry, things started popping up anyway. Okay, now the thing about my list is I want all of these movies converted because I have intentionally not picked films that I love 100% or that they're my greatest movies of all time or anything like that. They're movies that I just think, because the whole reason I go to 3D films, you know, if it's not a preview, is to have fun. Like 3D to me is a gimmick. And I mean, you know, it can be more than that. And we've seen people try and use it for that. But at this stage, my best memories of 3D are just films that I think are a fucking laugh and a half and benefit from 3D. So number five on my list is Deep Blue Sea. I want to see that shark take out fucking Samuel L. Jackson. I want to see those big shots where the sharks are jumping out at people.
Or that shot where the guy's under the water and the shark swings around and just takes him out.
Exactly. Yeah. Stuff like this would be an absolutely laugh riot experience, and it would be the thing best experienced as a group, like in a cinema with just 50 people all laughing, just completely having an absolute ball, and I think that film needs to be in 3D.
I agree. I didn't even think about it, but
it's one of those movies that really it's lacking something. It doesn't quite get there.
And that would be it.
The 3D would give it that extra 10-20% that it needs.
Because one of the other ones on my list, I'm going to go even further into that.
All right. My number four, I'm sticking with the classics here. My number four is Ben-Hur, the 1959 William Wilder version. Because let's face it, that chariot race in 3D and that Colosseum would be awesome.
All right. Totally not going
to
disagree with you on that.
Yeah, I agree. I almost put it on the list, and it's just one of those films. It's almost obvious.
Yeah, it almost feels like why wasn't it? Considering 1959 was the height of the 3D craze already, why wasn't it made in 3D? But anyway, because it would have cost more.
It would have cost more, even more. And it would suit conversion, I think, because it has a lot of visual detail. It's very colourful,
and it's also very static. There's not a lot of really fast camera movement.
That's true.
You could put a lot of effort into those big static vistas. Because let's face it, no film is shot in a wider aspect ratio than Ben-Hur. Could you imagine what that would look like in 3D? It'd be amazing. Absolutely incredible. All right, your number four.
My number four. I'm going to skip around on my list for the same reason. I'm going to say Lawrence of Arabia.
Almost went on my list.
Yeah.
There's a couple of David Leans. They almost all went on my list.
Again, for the same reason. It's a ridiculously long film, and because it's ridiculously long, it would be ridiculously expensive to convert it to 3D. But the visuals in that film are just so amazing, and we haven't seen it properly for such a long time. Like, the remastered version comes and goes to the cinemas every 10
years. That restored version was beautiful. Take that restored version that Scorsese oversaw, take that version, convert that. That's what you want to do.
And it's one of those films that goes, one of the ways that Blu-ray was advertised when the Blu-ray discs first started to come available, one of the films that was in in the early trailers to say, you know, here are the films that are coming out in Blu-ray, was Lawrence of Arabia, and there's beautiful shots, and it still hasn't come.
And it's Sony. I don't know why it's not out.
Mm. The theory is that they are waiting for next year, which will be the 50th anniversary.
Okay. Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Josh,
so
you're
I'm hoping that they've held it back for the extra couple of years just to
give us some more bonuses and stuff. Yeah.
Give it a 3D work.
Yeah, but absolutely. Doubt they're doing it in 3D.
No, I doubt it.
Number four, Josh.
Okay, number four is Iron Man. Because Iron Man is an absolute spectacle, and it has amazing shots. It has a lot of like things where he's firing at the camera or scenes where he's flying through the air, and I just think they would all look even better in 3D.
And it would suit going with the whole Marvel thing that's going
on. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Problem is that one, the only caveat I put on that one is I don't want it done unless it's done well.
It's going to be done by the same people who did Captain America and Thor.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
My number three is going into animated fare. I recently just saw The Lion King 3D conversion, which was astounding. And it made me think that traditional cel animation is an absolute perfect thing to be 3D converted because it's all really clear and defined lines. So very easy to convert. I'd like to see Fantasia converted to 3D.
Oh, wow, yes.
I think Fantasia.
The original or 2000?
The original Fantasia with the whole the demon on the mountain and the marching brooms and everything. Yeah. I think the original Fantasia converted to 3D would be
I think that's a really good choice because it wouldn't necessarily need to be done in a photorealistic way. It's an abstract movie. Mm. You can put whatever...
Let me tell you, the conversion of Lion King, which is coming out in September, by the way, is phenomenal. Mm. It is. You sit there and watch it. It is there's actually points in it where, because your first thought is, okay, they're just going to line cut out. It's really easy to do. But there's actually a point where Scar turns to screen and his face has depth, you know? And he's going to go, that's good. That's well done, you know?
Mm.
So
one of my eldest daughter grew up on that movie and watched it. There was a period of her life where she watched it every single day. And so there's like a whole team of people in my house who just cannot wait to see that film.
Yeah. Go see it when it comes out. It's well worth seeing.
Definitely.
You're number three.
My number three, I'm jumping around on my list a bit, but sticking with the animation theme, I think Katsuhiro Otomo's Akira.
Nice. Ah,
good choice. Mm. I didn't even think of Akira. Akira would have been fantastic.
I'm not much of an anime fan. I remember when Akira first came out, I thought this is it. This is the Blade Runner of animation. I absolutely love it. And I went to an all-night film festival of other animation films, came out a couple of hours later thinking, having seen more tentacle porn than I ever want to see in my life.
Let me guess. Urotsuki Doji.
I don't remember. There was some... I blocked them all out, but it was appalling. And I thought...
And Wicked City and Metropolis and all the films from that era, they were really out there.
And it hit my disgusting threshold just a bit too hard. Mm. And it's put me off anime pretty much since then. But Akira,
there's a lot to be seen.
Yeah, Akira is still, from the anime that I've seen, it's still the pinnacle. It's an incredible storytelling, an incredibly rich story, and with the most astounding visuals and colors. Mm-hmm. And it needs 3D.
Mm. Yeah, no, great choice. Josh, number three.
My number three is a film that was absolute trash. It was it was the first time we really all realized that both of these people, at least in their Western careers, were definitely going to have one-trick pony kind of lives. And it may have been one of the reasons that one of these actors actually retired. But The One, which is not a great film, but that final fucking sequence where he fights himself could benefit heavily from 3D.
Can I tell you a guilty little secret? I kind of like The One.
No, dude, and I do too. It wouldn't be on my list if I didn't want to see it again in 3D. But that whole film has a feeling like it was supposed to be 3D. Like, there's a lot of shots that are involved where, like, when he kicks over the power pole, the shot actually swings to a shot where it falls into camera.
Yeah.
These sort of things are almost built.
It's like almost like it came out too early.
Exactly.
If it had been shot 10 years later, it would have been shot in 3D.
Exactly, and it would have been amazing. Like, the shots where they're fighting in that old working whatever plant it was. I mean, who knows? Yeah. It didn't show anything actually being made. But big steel machines and a lot of, like, shots across big, long sections where they were fighting over, like, a walkway or something like this.
Yeah.
This would be so easy to make the perfect 3D film out of. And it would have given you so much more love for the film because it would have been the tacky 3D film we all wanted to see in the 80s.
Yeah, yep.
That's an awesome choice.
Yeah,
that's a very awesome good choice. My number two is Spartacus. The Stanley Kubrick Spartacus. I think that this film would be beautiful in 3D. And I think there's moments in this film where that big, vast battle at the end would really benefit. And the arena, the gladiator fighting in the arenas would also be very interesting.
There's a couple of great moments in that as well where I've forgotten the name of the character, but...
Kirk Douglas?
No, the trident-wielding gladiator that he has to fight, who then turns around and throws the trident at the Roman spectators. It comes towards camera.
Yeah.
It's little things like... I mean, It's one of Kubrick's most visually intense.
Yeah, it is. It's actually a very un-Kubrick film. It's very interesting, and all the better for it. But that's because it was actually started by somebody else. Kubrick was a takeover director who took it over, and it really kind of stands out of Kubrick's films. Where you sit there and go, "That doesn't." If you didn't know Kubrick had made Spartacus, you probably never have guessed that was a Kubrick.
No, it's got a coherent story and characters in it.
But it does have oysters in a bathtub, so, Well, the restored version does, anyway. Your number two.
My number two. I'm going to stick with the older films, and this is an easy and silly choice. Dial M for Murder.
Yes.
Because it's in 3D.
I was about to say, it was shot
in 3D. It was shot in 3D, and it... Why? It's like,
I saw it in 3D, dude.
One of the world's best directors ever actually made a film in 3D that is not... It's just gone.
I don't know why. I actually saw it in 3D about 15 years ago in Melbourne at the Astor. Mm-hmm. They did a 3D presentation of it. It was prior to the new digital projectors going in, so they actually made an anaglyph version of it. So you watched it in anaglyph. And even in anaglyph, it was great. But it was shot originally for polarized lenses,
yeah.
Which they've been using forever. And I don't know why it hasn't been re-released. Now we have all these digital projectors out there. Why aren't all of these films being re-released?
One of those things that somebody's going to hit the back catalog soon and sing, hey, we've actually
got thought Dial In for Murder in 3D was a phenomenal experience, because up until then, 3D, it was all gimmick, right? Mm. It was always about, all the stuff that came out in the 80s was all gimmick. It was all about,
right.
Movies were called things like Coming At You, you know, and stuff like that. It was all about the gimmick. When you watch Dial In for Murder, you realize that this was a film where, with the exception of one shot where her hand is reaching out because she's being strangled, with the exception of that one shot, the entire film is so subtle. Hitchcock did it just for depth. And there are moments in it where there's two people talking and they're walking around a table in the middle of the room.
Yep.
And that is such a subtle scene, because there's so much depth in that shot of them just walking around this table in the middle of the room. You think, I don't know why he didn't direct 3D more often. It was just, he was really good at it.
He was good at it. And it's such an anachronism to think that it's a film that was shot in 3D, but it takes place in one room.
Yeah,
it's with three characters. Yeah. It's all the better for it.
It's really good. I applaud you. It doesn't need to be converted though, because it's already actually shot in 3D.
So the footage exists.
Just
somewhere.
Release it. It's all we ask is you release it. So where are we? Number two, Josh.
My number two is one that is coming out, and I don't care that it's on your list of things we're not supposed to. Fuck that. Star Wars: The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh yeah,
I want to see that in 3D.
And you know what? To your credit, though, it is on a wish list, because it may never get made.
Exactly, and I know, and this is one of the other reasons that I am so incredibly excited to see whether or not this actually happens. There is so much in that film that would be amazing in 3D. You've got
the asteroid field, man.
Yes, the asteroid field, that whole scene, and then you've got am I mixing my films together here? Just looking through the list of things.
We got the asteroid field. He's got the Hoth battle with the walkers.
You can say anything about Star Wars. Yeah, you'd be corrected
in this battle. Yeah, Hoth battle would be one of the amazing ones.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Just those big long shots, and then the walkers coming along.
Absolutely.
Look,
whether we like it or hate it, we all have to go see the original prequel trilogy in 3D, because if he doesn't make money on those, he's not doing the original trilogy. So we have to go see them to pay for the original trilogy. So
I'll pay for a ticket. I don't need to go watch it.
Well, there you go. Fair enough.
I just write him a letter and say, here's $10. Skip.
Give me my ticket. I'm leaving now.
Yep. Here's four tickets worth of money. I'm out.
Just to let the chat room audience know, when we talked about this list, we thought, let's leave off the films that we know are supposedly being converted.
Like Titanic.
Titanic and the Star Wars series. But of course, you're right.
It may not happen.
It may not happen. There's a risk of that.
I didn't get the caveat thing.
No, I forgot to put it in the email.
I just found five films that you would like to see in 3D.
That is my fault.
I want to see that.
But I actually agree with you.
It's the best. Obviously, it's well regarded as the best of the Star Wars series. And if you don't know, of course, George Lucas has said that he's bringing out the entire six films converted to 3D, starting April,
with Phantom Menace.
Starting with, in chronological order. In story order. Starting with Phantom Menace in April next year, but they're coming out one per year beyond
that's
that.
That's right.
So
and McCallum came out about 2 months ago and basically said that it is not a given that they're all coming out. Rick McCallum is producing it. He basically said, if they don't make money, they will stop making them. Mm-hmm. They will stop converting.
Which is a... my French, that is a real dick move on his part.
No, it's a really smart move, because what he's basically saying is, well, you want them, you're going to have
to pay
for them.
That's right, that's right.
The whole thing is, I don't even think that needs to be said.
No, and as I said, the bottom line is, I said to Katie, my lovely wife, I was talking to her last night, and I said, the bottom line is, these films cannot fail, all right? Because it's only going to cost them at max $10 to $20 million to convert the films, right? And there is no way a Star Wars film, no matter which volume it is going into the cinema and is making less than $50 million at the box office.
That's right.
So even in realist, because people will pay just so they can see Star Wars on the big screen again. Period.
End That's of right. You could release
There is no way these are going to fail.
You could release it on one screen only and charge $1,000 a ticket, and it would still make $50 million.
Yep. People would still go see it.
All right, we're running late, so let me throw my number one out there. My number one is going to be 1939's Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
Purely because of one shot.
Okay.
Okay, now, the whole film is very lush. It's big. It's grand. It's got all those deep shots. But that shot, which is her walking through all the bodies...
Yep.
At the end of the battle, and the camera panning back to the flag flapping, that shot in 3D would be amazing. Quite frankly, it would just be mesmerizing. There's a lot of shots of on Tara and stuff like that, which would look fantastic. You know, it's not to everybody's taste, but I think a 3D conversion of that would be just amazing to have a look at, especially in its big bold Technicolor and everything else. So,
absolutely, and I think that's probably one of the more likely films on the list so far.
Too.
I think that if any of these films is going to get a...
Although, once again, comes to the same argument that your Lawrence of Arabia is, which is it's fucking long.
Yeah, but it's long, but it made 10 times as much money as Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, if you go by the adjusted dollar scale, it is still the number one box office film of all time. This film, by today's dollars, throughout the years, has made more money than any film in history. Mm. So you got to tell yourself, this is something about this movie.
That's right.
And MGM needs the money.
They do. All it needs now is somebody to champion it.
My wife, when we came out of Captain America, basically said if they wanted to remake Gone with the Wind right now, the guy who plays Howard Stark in... Captain America would be the perfect Rhett.
Dominic Cooper. It's an interesting choice.
She said he's got that Rhett feeling.
He's a little short.
Cast a shorter leading lady.
Yeah,
that's all it takes. Or you put him on a box. All right, you're number one, sir.
Let's go to Josh first.
Boom.
He's changing the order.
All right. My number one is a film which I think we may actually have to vault after this thing because I've used it that many times.
There was actually three I was going to put on my list. I said, no, they're going to vault.
Scanner Darkly. I want to see that in 3D. Rotoscoping as a concept is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it was a toss-up between that and the other film he did, which is
Waking Life.
But I think I'd pick this because a lot of the shots are already separated because of the way that it works. Mm. When a car goes down a street, it's actually a separate image. So it would benefit hugely from this.
It's the same, same issue I had with The Lion King. Animation itself is just beautiful for a 3D conversion.
Exactly. And then on top of that, there is this kind of already layered effect over it. So it almost comes out in 3D anyway.
Mm.
And because it's such a trip of a film, because everybody's constantly on drugs, you have those... shots where like images actually move and change, and I have this thing about the fact that I just think that would be an amazing experience to watch with a little more depth, because there are a lot of shots when he's doing his big speeches in the film where he's walking around the house and there's these big waving shots or shots of like people outside and stuff like this with a little depth. That effect which he tried to accomplish in the film would be even more
That's a good special. Point. It's very
and,
good point.
And it's one of those films, like we said with one of the earlier ones, that it doesn't have to be photorealistic. You've got an option to play with it there.
Mm.
And 3D, especially 3D conversion, is an artistic touch to a film, and not it's not necessarily realistic. That you're adding things to it. You can create the space whatever way you want to.
Exactly.
So it could be,
and you can just see somebody like Linklater, Richard Linklater, really seeing it that way. Like if someone gave him the project back and went, look, everything's going 3D now. Do you want to have a play with this? And just seeing his eyes light up over the very concept. Like this man is driven in the same way the best directors are in their world. Let's not say he's the best director. I'm not saying that at all. But when handed his own material and said, let's take it to another level, I think he would just absolutely die.
I think it would be very interesting. It would be a very interesting experiment. Okay, hit us with your number one.
All right, I was going to... I was going to cheat and go cheap and easy by saying Die Hard.
Yes,
that was going to be my
list, and I pulled it off mine.
It was on my list in front of the computer, so I thought everyone's going to notice it. I mean, Die Hard because it's the first modern action film. It's the first really, really well shot, well paced, well edited action film.
I would argue that, but not, that's a different show.
It's influenced every action movie that has come after it.
Yeah, but there was actually influence to it. But that's
this is true.
This is the argument actually is that the birth of the modern action film was actually First Blood.
Mm.
And if it wasn't for First Blood, you wouldn't have a Lethal Weapon or a Die Hard or anything else. But that's a whole different show.
No, I think certainly in terms of visuals, there's a visual style to Die Hard that just did not exist in action movies before that.
John McTiernan brought something.
And Jan de Bont, who went on to be a terrible director.
Well, Speed, though, is a great film.
Speed is a terrific film. And, you know,
With its problems,
but I have so much fun watching
it. I agree with the man. Yeah. Look,
Die Hard is a near-perfect action film.
Though First Blood may have influenced that film, it is not the one you remember. I remember Die Hard before I remember that film. Because you know what? I don't really like First Blood. I think it's okay.
No. But we're not talking about from the audience's point of view. We're talking about from the point of view of the making of these films, that Ted Kotcheff can never be discounted, because he took when First Blood came out in 1981, I think it was, or 80-81, when that came out, the studio execs were actually nervous about this whole thing, because he did something that nobody else had done at that point, which was up until that point an action film was French Connection, which was talk action scene, talk, action scene, talk, conclusion, right? Mm. That was an action film, right? And Ted Kotcheff said, why? And Ted Kotcheff said, if we're going to make an action film, let's go balls to the wall. And this is also Joel Silver, right? So this is, we're talking about that, not Joel Silver, sorry, Mario Casar and the producers of later will be The Terminator, right? Basically, he came along and said, what if we just go introduction, action, don't stop?
Yeah.
Right. And then we'll end with a big old bang. Right. Mm. And the producers basically came back to it afterwards, saying, "When do people get a chance to breathe? There's no chance there's no chance for any of this." But they did it, and the film was a massive hit.
Absolutely. And look, I know that we're sidelining right now, but my argument to this is that First Blood came out and showed us this concept of a balls to the wall action film, and I actually believe that Die Hard showed us how to do it right. Because Die Hard took the middle road between the two. It didn't have nothing but action. It has those great scenes of dialogue between him and the cop outside. It has these scenes where you're confronted with him talking to himself. Like, it takes moments to breathe, even if it is only momentarily. It shortens them down, but it takes kind of a halfway mark between what is French Connection and what is, you know, First Blood. Like, First Blood is just nightmarishly full on. It's one of those things where you finish at the end of it, you're like, I think I'm going to have a heart attack. I think I'm going to have a heart attack. But, you know, like, you've got this halfway mark where the other end of it is that they came out with this film and it birthed. And yeah, I agree. I think this film would be amazing in 3D.
Yeah, no, I think it does. I don't think there is
he's firing the rocket launcher at the truck outside and stuff like that. Just imagining those
because
in 3D.
Or him
jumping off the building.
I actually, there's no argument for me at all that this would be an amazing film in 3D. That's not the argument at all. I think we should also point out, though, that 48 Hours and I want to say Lethal Weapon. Yes, and Lethal Weapon both predate Die Hard, though. So as far as that style of action film, they both predated. What Die Hard did was it took the formula and perfected it. And it basically it's Joel Silver's formula, basically, right? So he comes along and he starts producing these films. Joel Silver does, right? And with Gordon. And they reinvent action. And then Joel Silver strikes off on his own and basically says, let's do it again. Let's do it better. Let's do it bigger. Optimum word here.
Yeah.
Bigger. Yeah. And you look at his oeuvre of films through that era of time, and they just get bigger. But there's a famous quote from Joel Silver where he says, I'm not going to stop until I approve I've got the biggest dick in Hollywood. Right? And he basically proved he had the biggest dick in Hollywood. At the time, Die Hard 2 was the most expensive film ever made.
Yeah, but like the thing for me and what makes it such a classic film, Die Hard works because it's the same sort of reason that, to steal from Chris Rock, who actually said once that he's like, rap music's a hard thing to defend, because back in the 80s it was easy. You could defend and break these things down on an intellectual level. Nowadays you can't. And it's the same sort of thing for me back then. It's like, this is what led on to Family Guy making these amazing sequences and borrowing from all this. It's what all directors kind of turned around and pointed back to when they did it, because you can break down Die Hard on an intellectual level. You can take that film, unlike things like, I'm sorry, First Blood, people can easily turn around to me and go, what fucking storyline? That movie is a fucking mess.
Although, actually, to be fair, I'm just going to decide like one more time. I've watched First Blood again recently. Forget all the other Rambo films. Forget all that. It's just like with the Rocky films. Forget all the other Rocky films, right? When you take First Blood and you take the original Rocky, these are both actually really good films. And the first Rambo film, First Blood, is actually before he was a superhero. It's before he was over-the-top nonsense. It was actually a really good film. And the most amazing thing about it is very little blood is actually spilled in that film. He actually doesn't kill anyone. Mm. You know, and this is the thing. It's not like the bloodbaths that came later. He wasn't trying to kill
people. I still think it's... like. I mean, I still have a problem with it. Like, the scene on the end of the film where he's on top of the building with the M60 and shooting the cop cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like... I'm out. I'm sorry. This is just ridiculous. And it's just the difference for me. It's like I get where you're coming from. I do. But to me, it's just I don't look at it the same way. When I think of Die Hard, my heart just swells. Yeah. Like it is
the biggest thing I have to say about Die Hard. I mean, I love Die Hard. Don't get me wrong. I think Die Hard is an amazing film. The biggest thing I have about Die Hard is it's the first time that we actually had a really quality script. I mean, this is a film that is so tightly written, dialogue, plotting, everything, that you just sit there and go, it actually has a far better script than the film actually should have deserved. You know what I mean? At that time, action films, you basically, the script was secondary to getting the action right, you know? Whereas this was a film where you sit there and go, God damn, this thing is well written.
Yeah,
you know?
It's got everything. I mean, the shot work's done well, the action's done well, like everything in the film works well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like everything is put together very. And like you said, it's probably got more than it actually deserves, right?
Yeah, yeah. But realistically, which made it a film that was so much
realistically,
better.
It's one of those few moments, a bit like what I've said before with Jason, Friday the 13th 1. It's like Chris Cunningham is not a great director. It's just the fact that all of these things came together at the same time, and it just worked perfectly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and this is the reason, I think, 3D-wise, there's just, if there was ever a film you were going to take and try and sell the 80s audience to actually go out and buy 3D TVs, this could be the one to actually make it work.
I think the reason I put it at the top of the list is because it holds up better than any other film of that time. It's the only action film that I can think of that you could re-release it now. And it would,
and what it, a it would, great bad guy!
Yeah,
oh,
just sensational!
Yeah,
the birth of Alan Rickman's career. Anyway, we are way over, guys. We got to get out of here. We got to do this. That's our list. Let's be done with it. All right,
it's your fault for bringing up Die Hard.
It's my fault. I did that.
Where are my show notes? All right. If you agree or disagree with anything we had to say today, want to put in your two bits about Captain America, what have you, anything you want, send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com. Now, Corin, did you hear that? Feedback@filmactually.com. Or you can drop us a voicemail at 02-801-13167. Or if you're out of the country or you're just cheap, you can go to Skype and just use our Skype ID, which is geekactually, all one word. All right. If you want to get merchandise, join our page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Anything. Hey, you want to find us, just go to geekactually.com. There's a big follow us button. And you can click on that. You'll find anything you want to do with anything with us. Remember, you can subscribe to this show on iTunes. You can watch us also record this show live every Saturday starting at 12 p.m. The recording day is at 12 p.m. We start this show at about 1:30 p.m.-ish, roughly, UTC plus 10. Follow the Twitter account at Geek Actually. We always tweet out when we're about to start films, so you know. The film actually start time is a bit fluid because it depends on Geek Actually before it. We've got a couple of friends we want to shout out. Charlie and Brad, formerly of the Movie Fan House podcast. They are back. They have a new podcast called Good Day, Sir. Thank God. And you can find them at reboundradio.com. WeekendRonan.com is the home of the Real Junkies podcast, R-E-E-L. You can also find them on iTunes. They are a movie podcast like us, but we... they drink tequila, unlike us. Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, every Thursday, Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM, or you can catch up with episodes later. Sorry, I'm rushing through this, but we're running late. RadioFremantle.com is where you can find that. Josh, tell us where they can find you.
You can find me at the interwebs on rawdlc.com. Go over there and check it out.
Thank you. And Sean, where can people find more of you?
You can find me at 3dhorizon.com.au. And we should quickly say, as we're wrapping up, 3D Horizon is a competition. We're giving away this.
I want it.
Brand new and sealed hardcover copy of Captain America. It's called the trade paperback. It's called American. It's not paperback. It's called America
trade
First.
Trade hardback.
It's a collection of 3 one-shot comics from the Theater of War series. And we're giving it away today on 3D Horizon. Well, you can enter up to between now, anytime between now and Friday. Just like us on Facebook. Just go to 3dhorizon.com.au. Click on the Facebook link. Like us on Facebook, and on Friday we'll pick one winner out of the people who like us on Facebook, and it'll be announced on next week's Film Actually show.
Absolutely. Now, just be aware that the actual running of the competition is through Sean. All right, so don't go writing to me about
Yeah, things. Go writing to me about
Write
it.
Write to Sean, because it's his competition, but we will announce the winner on the show. This is for you guys, the Film Actually listeners. That's all right? Right. So go out there and follow his fan page, and you have a chance to win this wonderful trade, okay? So, and if, you know, we're all Captain America here today, so this is the trade you want to win, okay?
There's more information about the book on the site as well.
Absolutely. All right, so, and you've said where we can find you, so that's right. Good. We also want a quick shout-out, because it's the last show of the day, a quick shout-out to Josh Spencer, our artist, who does all of our cartoon artwork for our site and our cover art, attackninja.blogspot.com. Find out more about Josh Spencer there. We are closing the show today with a piece of Alan Silvestri's score from the Captain America, the First Avenger soundtrack. This track is called The Captain America March. Adequately enough, I guess. And I think that's it. We're done. Excellent. Yes?
Yep.
We're done. Nothing else? Okay, in that case, we're going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week.
And bye. See them in 3D.
And see them in 3D. Bye now.